Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball.
It wasn't a foul, absolutely not. But no, I'm glad to see the goalkeeper is getting the benefit of the doubt.
You always get the benefit of the doubt.
Subscribe to the feed in the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM.
The Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball.
Very happy Friday. Welcome along to OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. It's 7:30 on the 7th of July 2023. And you know it's a Friday because producer Cullum is giving us a round of applause from the booth and cheering and hollering and just generally, Jojo's laughing as well. This is fantastic. Aisling O'Reilly, good morning.
Good morning, Shane. How is things?
Just feels like Friday, doesn't it, when the lads are...
Cullum is a proper hype man, isn't he?
Proper hype man. You kind of need this sometimes to just get yourself in the mood for Friday.
Yeah.
I actually forgot it was Friday till I saw Cullum look so happy out there. And
do you know what? Until
me.
You just said that there, I just registered it was Friday. Because when you work weekends, Fridays, you're not exactly the Friday feeling. But
imagine. Yeah. So what day is Friday for you technically?
It changes every week. So I don't know. Could be a Monday, which is pretty grim.
Right.
But here, I work in sport, so it's all good. I'm not going to
complain. I suppose, you're not going to get much sympathy from people out there,
working
in sport. You were at this is the last opportunity I'm going to get, but they're going to kill me for doing this, but last opportunity I get to talk about last weekend and Monaghan. And we talked to this.
Three minutes in.
Not even. So, clutch players. We were talking about clutch players a little bit earlier. Rian O'Neill, Conor McManus, it was just the definition of players who want the ball at the most dangerous and opportune moments.
Yeah.
Like those two lads showed it last weekend.
Unbelievable. Like I was sitting down beside the Monaghan subs and I saw Conor McManus warming up a few times, and even before the game I saw him and he looked a bit maybe pissed off, or maybe he's in the zone. Maybe that's the way he does it. But you could see that he wanted to be on that pitch, and to come on and do what he done is just phenomenal. Mm. You know, I think he took a shot at the start, it just dropped short, and to step up again, and obviously then to win the free, to take the free and to put it to penalties. I don't think players like that come around too often. And Conor McManus is obviously definitely Monaghan's best ever clutch player. Vinnie Corey said it after the game and he couldn't have put it better. And we mentioned there as well, Rian O'Neill, it was similar moments for him. You know, there was times when maybe the ball was out of scoring distance and he wanted to step up and try his hand at it. And there was one point that Gerry O'Byrne's just took the ball and like sort of played it backwards and just like, keep the ball. And I just seen Rian just a bit like, you know, I was going to go for that. But then we saw his free as well out near the sideline. Like, he's just a phenomenal player. And
ridiculous.
Yeah, it just made us think, like, who are these clutch players that, you know, across the country we have? There are definitely two that are up there.
Clifford's obviously an obvious
Clifford,
answer.
Yeah, of course.
Shane Walsh's performance in the All-Ireland final last year would lead you to believe he's a clutch player. Obviously, this year it didn't exactly materialise for him.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just players who, like, imagine how brave that is in a moment like that where it's a melting pot. You know, your county is a point down. Last kick of extra time. They're playing the ball short. All of the Armagh defenders know that it's you that wants the ball.
Yeah.
Like, Monaghan clearly want the ball to be in McManus's hands. Somehow he still gets it. Still skips past Grugan and buys the free. It's so wise what he did there. Like, just to run towards the goal, someone will trip me up.
Yeah. Exactly. And the difference is he wants it. Like, he wants to take it. Like, he's loving it. Like, that is a different
angle.
Mindset.
Were you on the Hill 16 or near Hill 16 when the free was over?
Yeah.
I saw your angle of the...
Unbelievable,
class.
Yeah. I took a video of it, Shane. What do you think of that?
No, listen, I was delighted to see another angle of it, so...
I was actually thinking of that when I took the video.
I was happy enough.
Like, Shane's not going to like this.
Yeah. If it's a Monaghan moment that I get to see again and again, it's absolutely fine. We should say to people that, so you're going to the hurling as well this weekend?
Looking forward to that. And the Camogie's on before it as well, so... Brilliant to see them at Croke Park. But yeah, should be a good weekend. I think it's getting really exciting now. They're tough semi-finals to call. Clare have probably been the team of the championship so far. Some great storylines around them. And yeah, they came up short in the Munster final against Limerick by a point that day. But maybe it's going to be a blessing in disguise for them.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, a lot of the build up, I guess, this week, James O'Connor and even the lads yesterday were very much they're going to be one score games in both games. That seems to be the general feeling. I'd love if it goes that way. We will preview the hurling a little bit later on in the show, just to highlight what's coming up between now and 10 o'clock with myself and Aisling. From around 7:55 a.m. this morning, Aoife Mannion, really interested to hear her thoughts on I guess her disappointment in missing out on Vera Powell's Republic of Ireland World Cup squad, the season just gone with Manchester United, her injuries, Alessia Russo's departure from Old Trafford, maybe we'll touch on as well, and of course the game last night, the 3-0 defeat by France at Tallaght Stadium, which we'll get into very shortly. Kieran Joyce, former Kilkenny hurler, and Brendan Butler, the former Clare star, at 8:20, previewing that game on Sunday, Clare Kilkenny at Croke Park. We'll have the sports pages at 8:45. We'll have Jack Carty, the Connacht captain and out half, at around 8:50 on the show this morning. He's an ambassador for the Jack and Jill Foundation as well, so we'll touch on the season just gone for him and the friend's departure and loads more. Wimbledon update, Colin Buhig will bring his smiling Friday happiness into studio to bring us the latest. Andy Murray, of course, 2-1 up in his match last night against Tsitsipas, and that game was stopped at around 11 o'clock for curfew reasons at Wimbledon, which just annoyed the head of me last night. I was like, oh, this is great, and then all of a sudden they stop it. But look, we'll get into all Wimbledon and the talking points with Colm at around 9:15, and then at 9:30, if you missed it, Owen Colligan's, you had to be there. Brilliant episode. And you'll get Paul Howard's episode, of course, from yesterday on YouTube and podcast. Aisling, you stumbled into the studio this morning. You stumbled into Marconi House. You've the crutches. The crutches aren't exactly on set here, but they're just out of camera line. But what's happened?
Well, it's nothing serious now. I'm probably too dramatic, but...
Oh, you can see the crutches. Sorry, brilliant. We've got a camera angle of the crutches.
Oh, my God, that was all, Column.
Brilliant, Emma.
I'm completely
well done.
Dramatic.
Yeah.
No, I don't know yet exactly, but I think I tore my hamstring.
Okay.
I'm hoping it is not fully torn, but yeah, have to wait and see. I only did it on Wednesday at a game. I'd never done it before, so I wasn't sure. Like, I come off straight away once I did it. Like, I sprinted once at the start of the game, and then the second ball I got, I turned... I had space, everyone was like, go.
Yeah.
Ran, took a bounce, then I went to solo it, and as I just brought my leg up to take the solo, I just heard like a pop.
The right foot.
Left foot.
You're left footed.
And just heard like a bit of a pop and knew straight away my leg just fell, and I just laid it off and just fell to the ground.
Yeah.
And I often have seen it obviously reporting on county games that I'm like, they go straight down and they hold their leg straight away. I was like, oh no, I think this is hamstring. Because I'd never did it. I've been touch wood, really lucky with injuries. So, yeah. But then I was obviously on Google straight away being like, what is wrong?
Yeah.
But yeah, very, very dramatic now with
the
crutches.
That camera angle was the most dramatic thing I've seen all morning. The crutches just sitting in the corner.
He placed
it's like we
them
planted
there.
Them there for dramatic effect.
Yeah.
It was all Emma, apparently. Yeah, yeah. She knew.
Yeah. But yeah, hopefully not too serious. But they just say to stay off it for like 48 to 72 hours. That's the best time to stay off and you have the best chance of getting back for championship. It's all about that, Shane.
Listen, you have to peak for the right times of the year. You know.
You'll
be grand, hopefully. Well, touch wood, you'll recover nice and quickly, Aisling.
Fingers crossed.
The thoughts of everyone with off the ball is
thanks,
course,
Shane.
With
thank
your
you.
Left
appreciate
hamstring.
That.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into five themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first three boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Cathy McNamee has joined us in studio as well this morning.
Hello, guys. How are we?
Keeping well.
Good morning.
The back of the Irish Daily Mail kind of highlighting the thoughts in the papers this morning. Get serious. Power implores players to cut out mistakes. Vera Power acknowledging, quote, individual mistakes proved costly as France pooped to the Republic of Ireland's World Cup farewell party. Disappointing. Last night, I think you were there at Tallaght Stadium.
Yeah. It's hard to know how to feel coming out of it because France are just such a talented side. You know, you look at the levels of experience there and the majority of the players are playing for, you know, Lyon, PSG, all these top clubs. I think the first 40-odd minutes were really impressive and much more progressive than I expected to see that Ireland team play. And I think we really saw the shoots of what we had seen in the US games grow a little bit, and the relationship between certain players like Marissa Shiva and Kira Caruso really improve, and hopefully that can only get better as time goes on. Now, is it coming a little bit soon for the World Cup? Probably. I think the goals we conceded were so disappointing because those were the sort of things that we've tried really hard to stamp out of our game. I just recorded the latest episode of Koi Gig, which will be up very, very soon in any of your podcast feeds. But Karen and I were saying it was kind of like a bit of a reality check last night, I suppose, because we've been relatively positive and our focus has been almost more so on the squad and who's going to make it and individual performances rather than the entire overall view of the World Cup and how we're going to do in games itself. And I think, you know, the quality that we face against France is definitely close to some of the quality we're going to face in the World Cup, and add into that all the added stresses and pressures of the game as well. But yeah, I mean, the atmosphere was unreal despite the fact there was a howling gale. The rain was absolutely lashing down. Like, it was 10-15 minutes before the game actually started and there was barely anyone in the stands, and I was like, oh no, have people not come out because, you know,
the weather
is shocking. But actually, you know, the crowd was great. One of the loudest crowds I've heard in Tala. So from that perspective, it was a really good send off for the team, but definitely a lot of things to work on in the next 2 weeks. Can we fix an entire team in 2 weeks?
Yeah. Absolutely, loads of time. No, there was a lot of positives. For me, I thought maybe unfamiliar a little bit with each other. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what came across, because as you said, Marissa Shiva and Kira Caruso, they linked up so well. Sinead Farrelly, even, you know, the touch she got for that first goal, which pretty much was a goal. I know the French goalkeeper maybe had stopped at that point, but still, she was onside.
Yeah, you should keep playing, though. That's not our fault if she listened to the whistle.
Play the whistle doesn't come into it now.
But the thing is, as well, at the World Cup, there will be VAR. So in those situations, you kind of have to train yourself to keep going, because there's a chance, if that had been pulled back, it would have been given as onside.
Yeah, just unfamiliar at times, I just thought, was what I saw. Like, I think it was Izzy Atkinson up the, I think it was the left wing, and she just laid a ball off to Marissa Shiva, and Marissa Shiva gave it back to her, but she didn't make the run on. And I was like, they're little things that you'll know if you play with each other a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, I really felt for Izzy Atkinson when she came on, because obviously coming on to replace Katie McCabe are very, very big boots to fill anyways, but she did look particularly lost last night. But that's not necessarily a bad thing either. Like, I'd rather she experience it now in Tala against France in a friendly and realise, you know, okay, well, that's the sort of level that I need to be at, or that's how much harder I need to work to get to a certain level, than having that first experience of coming on against, like, say, Australia or Canada or Nigeria in the World Cup. I thought there was just like a few performances that were a little bit off. You had the likes of Heather Payne. It's probably one of the worst games I've seen from her. It felt like she was just chasing her tail a lot of the time and couldn't get herself properly into the game.
Is that her best position? To me, she looked maybe out of position.
I do think it is her best position. Like, it's where she normally plays when she's over in the States.
Yeah.
And, like, chatting to her at the media day that we were at last week, she was I was kind of saying, you know, how are you finding switching around for the national team? Because that's not that unusual. You look at Anya Gorman, she plays in defence for the national team and then is up front in the club game. And she said herself that she feels a bit more comfortable there. I think it was probably just the quality of the... I don't think Heather Payne often comes up against players who can outrun her. And there was a lot of that last night. Like, the French team are so fast, and also their one-touch football is just, it's so sublime to watch. When they got going in the second half, you kind of could very easily forget they were playing Ireland and just sit there and enjoy watching them pass the ball back to each other. So yeah, I think that was it with her more than the actual positioning. And obviously that's going to be important, like when we're looking at who we're facing, who's she going to be up against, is because her pace and her ability to just keep running is one of her best attributes.
Such a machine. She just never stops. It's incredible.
Unreal. The biggest concern for me possibly was the Lacroix second goal in the second half. Like, so we can use the excuse all we want. Are France the best, are the fifth best team in the world? They're way higher than us in the rankings. But that run, any team can make that run. That's not a fifth best team in the world sort of run from a set piece. Normally we're good at set pieces as well, which is the thing that concerns me, but that's something that was just a basic error of judgment.
Yeah, I think that would probably be the goal they're most... The first one and the third one, I think those are the two that they'll be the most disappointed about. I mean, the first one, we lost it in midfield, really, and like it's rare that we let teams get in that close to goal. Like, I think it was just really unfortunate for Courtney that it squirmed the way it did. I think there was a lot of build-up play prior to that point that was probably more to blame than the way the goal went in the end. With the third one, France are so good at set pieces. That's actually where they've got the majority of their goals over the last couple of months. They played games against, I think it was Colombia, Canada and someone else, I think Zambia or something as well, and nearly all the goals in that came from set pieces. So we definitely would have known going into last night that was something that we really had to defend well, and we didn't for that third goal. It's so hard because I think with the team they it's a frustrating thing where I think a lot of the time the team know what they need to do, but the quality isn't just quite there to be able to properly achieve it. And, you know, Karen was saying it earlier, we love it when a team starts like lumping balls into the box because that's what we're good at. We have like our big, strong defenders in Louise Quinn, Nifahi, whoever it might be, and we're happy to, you know, get rid of those balls all day long. But also we need to be able to make sure we're doing that on individual set pieces as well as when the pressure is on and a team are maybe hammering us trying to get a goal.
Yeah, you'd worry about the lack of attempts on goal as well. Like, even at 3-0 down and even against a team with the quality of France, you want to be getting shots off, you want to be creating chances, and they just... I think Kira Caruso said it after the game, we have to be uncomfortable, or comfortable being uncomfortable, which is something that this Irish team have to get used to doing, because it might happen against Australia where you go a goal down, maybe two goals down. Touch wood, that doesn't happen. But you need to be able to respond to that.
That's the thing, we're not good at responding to going to a goal down in general. I know we did it in the Zambia game, but I feel like that was not really a game to base much off just because of how unusual it was in terms of five subs at half time and the fact that half the squad were vying for a place in the World Cup team. I saw actually on Twitter last night, just when we were playing well, like before the first goal went in, and a lot of international commentators were like, ooh, this is exciting from this Irish team. Probably people who haven't watched us as much over the last couple of months and seen that kind of growth to where we are now. And they were like, you know, this is really exciting. We haven't seen this from this Ireland team before. And it was ESPN Sophie Lawson who was agreeing and being like, yeah, this is really exciting, but I've two questions is, A, can they do it for 90 minutes? And B, where are the goals going to come from open play? And I was just like, shh, don't say the quiet part out loud, because that's what we've all known to be the issue with Ireland for a long time. We see the potential of how we played in that first 40, 45 minutes. And then we also look and go, okay, but where is that goal going to come from if we do get it? Kira Caruso did say last night when I was chatting to her that even the fact that goal was offside, well, technically it wasn't offside, it was onside. Like, you can tell by all the replays. A 7-year-old tapped me on the shoulder and told me that it was onside, and I choose to believe her over the lineswoman.
Yeah.
But she was saying, even though it was flagged offside, it was still a massive boost for her, knowing that she could get into those positions, and that if it was the World Cup, there would be VAR and that goal would be given. And it put trust in herself. Like, when she played for HB College, which a lot of people in Ireland won't have watched, I think in like 50 odd appearances, she had 30 goals. So she has the goals in her, and she also has that strength up
She's
front.
She's powerful.
Yeah.
She's well able to hold off a player, and she can turn.
She turned Wendy Renard like a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you go.
Absolutely. It's brilliant to see that. But what happened then? Like, it was, what, 30 minutes when Katie McCabe went off? Is that really what happened?
I think so, and this is something that's been such an issue with this team for so long, is that you take one of the central cogs out of it and things go to pot quite quickly. Like, there are certain positions, say, like Ruscha and Lily Ag, you can swap those out and it doesn't make a massive difference. You can, you know, take Megan Connolly out of midfield and stick her in the back line. Again, we can adapt to stuff like that, but Katie going off injured, Denise going down, you could even arguably say something happening to Courtney. Those are like the little things that are going to send this team spinning a little bit, and we do need to work on that. I know there was quite a few people saying last night that a character like Jamie Finn could have probably done a job for us in terms of just the general strength she brings when she's on the ball.
I was thinking that.
Yeah, and even just experience-wise too. Mm. I was kind of surprised Chloe Mustaki wasn't brought on a little bit earlier. But then I was also like, maybe Vera wants to give Izzy Atkinson the kind of exposure to this sort of side before the World Cup. I mean, the FAI have just said that Katie rolled her ankle and she's fine. She seemed to walk off the pitch totally okay. She had a bit of ice on it, but, you know, she wasn't hobbling or anything. She wasn't assisted going off. Vera just said that she was going to be assessed by the doctor in the next couple of days. I think they're flying out today, so possibly not today, but in the coming days, we'll find out a little bit more about what the situation is there. Hopefully it's just precautionary. They said it was, but I never really trust these things until I actually get until I have a scan on my desk of Katie's ankle. I'm not trusting anything.
And a flight to Australia now is not ideal with an ankle.
No, it's not great. And like, even it's not even great for, say, the three US players who only flew into camp from the States, you know, mid last week, and now have to go and do another, well, I don't know how long their layover is, minus 12 hours in Dubai. So hopefully they don't have to go through that experience. But, you know, you're looking at a good 24 hours worth of travel after a high intensity game. It's not the easiest situation to go into, but the fact that they're over there early does mean that they will have time to adjust to the time difference. And, you know, I think the next couple of days, what's going to be important is not so much what they're doing on the pitch, but probably off the pitch in terms
diet, nutrition,
of rest, recovery, diet, nutrition, tactics, mentality, so that we're not falling apart the way that we did last night when we conceded the goals. I think if we had just conceded the one and had managed to get in at halftime, it was definitely a sucker punch, but there would have been something more to say, whereas the two in quick succession, the team just looked absolutely dumbfounded by it.
Yeah,
we kind of regained a little bit of composure in the second half, but you just saw that France had that quality where they could just turn a screw on us if they wanted to. And that's what they did. And, like, you have to look at this French team. They haven't, like, when they were playing under Corinne Diacre, you know, there was so much consternation within the team, so much, you know, infighting. And that's only started being resolved in the last couple of months since Xavier Renard came in. And they still haven't fully clicked. And I think when they do click, they are going to do some serious, serious damage. World Cup possibly coming too soon for them. But next year, if I was a betting woman, there would be some money.
Mm. You were chatting to Vera Powell last night. I think we have a clip. What are you talking about here?
So just chatting about how she feels the game went. She was quite positive afterwards. She said, like, although there were the individual mistakes, this is the time to work on these things ahead of the game against Australia.
Cool, let's have a look.
The game in Talbot before heading off to the World Cup, how are you feeling afterwards?
Very proud. And the goals against were individual mistakes, and we learned massively from it. That is why we played this game. the first game that we set was this game, the latest. I want to have a top five nation at this day. We manage it from there. We built the program, because what happened tonight always happens when you play for the first time at this level, just before a World Cup or European Cup or Olympic Games. And you can only get ready for Australia to make the mistakes that we've done tonight. But other than that, I think that we have massively impressed. I was really proud of the players. Injury time, we lost it. Individual mistake. They know now that at this level, you cannot think I will catch up a meter, because you will not. And you have to, at that moment, you just have to stick together, get the lines close. So we learned from that too. And the third goal was also individual mistake. It was a player running from midfield and was not followed. So those things only help us to get ready for Australia. And then hopefully those mistakes will not happen anymore.
Yes, we do have to look at the positives, don't we? Like,
Yeah, definitely. Like, when you look at that first 30, 40 minutes, yeah. Like, it was exciting to watch. You know, I was watching it with people that maybe don't always get a chance to watch them play. And
yeah.
They were really excited by it. And I was like, yes, you know, this is the type of football we want to play. I suppose going back to the goal again, if that went in, it's what ifs, but like if that went in, it's a different game altogether.
Irish football doesn't survive on what ifs, that's like not at all.
No, ever, not one never, bit. Never. But it goes in, that's completely different. The, you know, the boost that gives to the likes of Sinead Farrelly, who got the touch on, for Marissa Shiva, who at that point was just playing brilliantly. Yeah. Her pace is frightening. You know,
there was one say she turned on the jets, and she was about like 10-20 yards behind the French player, and all of a sudden she was in front of her with the ball, and I was like,
so speedy.
When did that happen?
So there is lots of positives to take. I just think it's just more game time together. Maybe going out to Australia now, a bit more bonding time, all of that. You know, you've girls coming in there, they're making their home debuts as such, you know. Then they're going to a World Cup.
This
you know,
is what I was talking to people about last night. And like, Shane, you might know even on the men's side, but like, has there ever been a situation where a team has two players making their home debut?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's the normal thing to do. You know, it feels like a very strange. But then again, if they're good enough, they're good enough. Yeah, they have to be in the squad. And it's probably fair enough that they were in the squad. So, I mean.
They're great players. You can't deny that. I think. Part of me feels slightly sorry for them in that obviously the whole conversation has been about
the players
who have played in Ireland for so long that missed out, and it's also bad for them. But at this stage, you know, they're pulling on the green jersey. We have to get behind them. They are Irish players, no matter how many caps they have to their name. You know, if you have one cap, you're an Irish player. Mm-hmm. So like we were chatting yesterday about once you're an Olympian, you're always an Olympian. You know, you can't, once you have that senior thing under your belt, I won't say every age level, because obviously we have a few traitors in that regard, not looking at anyone in particular. But I suppose they've definitely earned their place in that they've put in the performances, even if there's still a little bit of work to be done there in terms of making them click with the squad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a matter of time. I think that's all you can do with that.
Still some issues to iron out for sure ahead of the World Cup in a couple of weeks' time. Of course, the team heading off to Australia, as we said, today, 7:55 a.m. on Friday morning's OTB. And we're going to come back to that game in just a second. But first, I should mention, Off the Ball is coming to the Cork Podcast Festival. Join us on Sunday, 27th of August, in the Cork Opera House. Jimmy Barry Murphy, one of our confirmed guests, and plenty more to come as well. Don't miss out on a great night of conversation and crack in the heart of the Rebel County. For tickets, go to corkpodcastfestival.ie/off-the-ball. After this very short break, Manchester United on the Republic of Ireland's Aoife Mannion. Stay with us.
You're listening to OTB AM.
Okay, 7:57 a.m. approaching on Friday morning's OTBM, the Sports Breakfast Show with Off the Ball. Myself and Ashley with you until 10 o'clock as well this morning. Delighted to reflect on the game more now from last night, the French 3-0 win over the Republic of Ireland at Tallaght Stadium with the Manchester United and Irish star Aoife Mannion. Good morning, Aoife. How are things?
Hi, Shane. Hi, Aisling. Lovely to be on. Thanks for having me on.
Hi, Aoife. How are you?
Thanks for coming on. How does it feel watching the match last night? Is it bittersweet? Is it exciting? What are the overriding emotions when you're sitting down to watch the game?
I always say it's more nerve-wracking watching the games than actually playing in them. So I was so excited to see how they got on. Obviously, I know that we're gonna talk about the game, but the overall sense was leading into the game, just a real sort of happiness for them with a send-off game at Tala. Obviously, that game against Zambia last week, I have family that went to the game. So I was really, really excited in the lead-up for them to get, you know, a really nice send-off heading off to the World Cup.
Some definite positives to take, I guess, from the match last night, Aoife. Like, clearly, the quality of opposition in France, that's about as good as you can expect to play against. Australia and Canada will certainly be of a level, but maybe just below where France are at in the last few years. So I guess getting opposition of that quality is something Vera Pauw has really hammered home in the last few years. That's an important thing for this group of players.
Yeah, I mean, make no joke, France are one of the best teams in the world. I think they're ranked fifth, and really they're a bit of an unknown quantity. They have some quality players. Obviously, they've just had a manager, so things have changed with their tactics, with their players. So it would have been hard to really predict what they were going to be like in the game. And crucially, they changed their formation at halftime as well, which I thought really disrupted the flow of the game. I've got one old United teammate. She was a centre-half in the first half, and then she was like left wing in the second half. And so that sort of speaks to, you know, credit to them, their flexibility and how they adapted in the game. And I hope that it doesn't get lost in the scoreline that actually France are a really, really top team and will definitely be pushing at the World Cup to do big things.
I was listening to, I think it was Karen Duggan on telly after the match last night, and she was saying Denise O'Sullivan's late yellow card was, I think, Ireland's only yellow card in the match. And she was making the point she'd like to see a little bit more physicality, aggression. Now, she's not obviously looking for more players to get booked, but maybe a little bit more aggression and maybe playing on the edge. Would you like to see a little bit more of that from the Irish team, that maybe head into a World Cup? That could be a positive thing.
I think something that, you know, you could never accuse the girls of doing is not putting in enough effort or aggressiveness. So, you know, me as a defender, that's kind of my bread and butter, and that's all of the girls' bread and butter that are defenders. So, you know, maybe there are instances, I didn't see it myself, I think physicality is something that they will always bring in spades. And also what you've got to remember as well is the formation that they were set out in, our team, Ireland, it's a five at the back, so it's not necessarily something where there's going to be real clear 1v1 moments all over the pitch. It's a lot more about tactics, containing the opposition, and then getting really good opportunities, potentially on the build-up, but a lot on the break as well. So for me, knowing those girls, I know that physicality, it can never be questioned, and it's always at the fore. But we can always have these questions, can't we?
Yeah, Aoife, definitely playing that style of play, you have to be patient. And we were just speaking about the positives there within the Irish performance, mainly maybe the first 30, 40 minutes. For you, what did you make of maybe the link-up play up front with Ciara Caruso, Sinead Farrelly, Marissa Shiva in particular?
I thought in the first 40 minutes we did really, really well. Ciara Caruso has sort of came out of nowhere really in the last few games to develop herself as that sort of lone point target number nine, and I'm absolutely delighted for her. She's a lovely girl, and certainly in those first portion of the game, she did really well. She's a really good hold up player, and I think the system that we play in, it really suits having a strong, confident target person. And there was one moment where she kind of, I was watching it, and she got the ball and then she kind of croifed it behind Wendy Renard. We're talking about the most prolific central defender in the whole world, really, Wendy Renard. So, you know, kudos to her, and I hope that she can continue with that confidence. Obviously, my other mates, Amber Barrett and other people like that who are only going to come into the fore and add on top of that. But really, last night, I think, showed a real taste of what Ciara's going to try and bring at the World Cup.
We talked about where it went wrong, and we wondered, maybe was it Katie McCabe going off? What is it like to be in and around Katie McCabe? Like, is it her presence? Obviously, we see it when her football, but she wasn't overly having a massive effect football-wise last night. But is it her presence as well that she really brings to the team?
You know, there's lots of leaders on the pitch in terms of players who are captains for their club, which is unusual, actually. So just off the top of my mind, you've got sort of Denise O'Sullivan at North Carolina, obviously Katie McCabe. I'm sure Louise is in the mix there as well. But really, obviously, Katie is our captain. So it's not just sometimes what someone does either talking wise or on the pitch, is sometimes it's just that presence. Mm. It's knowing that you're lining out against someone who really does not, they have no fear and she does not care who she's playing against, what team it is. And that can kind of give you that confidence. And look, sometimes moments just happen like that. You know, I think the moment when France started to be able to bring in some of their wingers into play a bit better, and they sussed that that was the way that they were going to have to go, rather than trying to play in between our midfield and our defence, which we're always very good at keeping those gaps really small. I think when they sussed that out and they thought, right, we're going to go around Ireland, I think that's when the momentum started to change. So obviously that coincided shortly with Katie McCabe coming off. And, you know, as a player, it's never nice to see a fellow teammate going off the pitch injured as well. I'm not saying that would have affected, I don't necessarily think it would have, but it's definitely a mute moment when that happens. So maybe a bit of everything.
I'm sure there's a lot of mental fatigue as well with the team, Aoife, naturally, given the tail end of the season, and then of course the squad selection, the pressure and all of that in the last number of weeks. So clearly there's been a lot of, I guess, stress laid onto these players. So, you know, when you see some of the little things that led to goals last night that are maybe concerns, at least, I guess, they're happening now and not in 2 weeks' time.
Well, it's definitely the case that, you know, what's happening now is a dry run for the World Cup. So you take it, you take the little bits and bobs now rather than 2 weeks' time. In terms of maybe being tired or fatigue, actually the schedule that they've been having has been really good. It's been giving them a few days off in the week to return to their families in Ireland and, you know, just have a little bit of downtime and then be able to keep that intensity. That said, you know, as a player, they'd know that they were in the run into the World Cup, so you're always going to have that anticipation. And also you're playing in front of a record teller crowd for the Irish women, you know, Ireland women's game. So there will be that as well. Potentially it's good to get that extra atmosphere. Certainly my first cap for Ireland over in Spain a few months ago, that there wouldn't have been any atmosphere at all. So it's really good that those girls are going to get that in spades, because obviously that first opener against Australia, I think it's in a sellout crowd of something like 80,000. So I think it's all good things, and it's all hopefully going to be built on and taken forward.
I presume you're heading over to Australia yourself in a viewing capacity. Like it's. I guess, how do you feel about the whole thing now? Because I know you are so close and so unlucky with injuries, and timing is everything, I guess, when it comes to squad selection. But how's your head feeling now, and how are you thinking about it at all at this stage?
Well, firstly, thanks for asking. Look, there's a few of us that just missed out for various reasons. And I was gutted at the time. And I think the squad announcement was something around Tuesday last week. And I ended up, I just got a knee brace off that I'd had on for a few weeks. And then I stayed over in Ireland for the week. I didn't get in touch with our physio back at United. Stayed over, just stayed with my family. And they kind of, you know, got around me and, you know, we did things. I went to the Mayo Dublin quarter final in Croke Park. Won't say anything about the result. So I did a few things just to put my feet back on the ground. You know, take a little dose of reality. And then by the time I came back to England this week, back to United, I've been more of the verve to like approach it in the right way. And I'd said at the time, look, I'm going to go to Australia. And I didn't realise I hadn't really properly got that okayed from the physios and from the manager at United. So I'm pleased to say that they're supporting that. I'd sort of put the cart before the horse. So I'd sort of said that and I hadn't actually checked, but they were delighted for me. So I've booked my flights. I'll be eating rice and beans when I'm over there. No, I've booked my flights and I'm absolutely buzzing to sort of go. And I think I'm doing the second best thing. So the first best thing is going over and playing. And then the second best thing is sort of being in the mix as much as I can. Told the girls that I'm going. So I'm really, really looking forward to it.
That's a brilliant mindset to have, Aoife. Is that something that you've always had? Like, I read your tweet not long after it was announced and you were congratulating the girls and saying how proud they should be. Like, that's an incredible way to be able to look at things. Is that something you've always had?
Oh, thank you. I don't know if it's necessarily something that I've been aiming for. And, you know, there's probably moments that you'd catch me where maybe I wouldn't be able to hit that note quite as good. But on the whole, I'm trying to take that mindset. And also a big thing is knowing those girls, knowing their characters, their personalities. knowing their families, knowing if they're anything like my family, that would be one of the biggest achievements in your whole life. So I'm just so pleased for them to obviously get that opportunity, as I would have wanted to have. And so I'm delighted for them, and especially for players like Denise O'Sullivan, who has just done, you know, 100 caps on her last camp. And so there's players that have seen that from day one to where it is now, and it's so important for them to get that, you know, almost like the fruits of, or the rewards of everything they've put in. So there's that history that comes with it as well, that it will be really, really nice to sit and watch that. And obviously I've only been sort of lucky enough to kind of come into it really late, and hopefully my journey will go on well past the World Cup. But there's a lot of those girls who, for this has been a long time coming. So that's going to be really nice to sort of see and witness.
That's the attitude as well, isn't it, Aoife? Like, when you think back to your opening cap, as you say, against China in February, like, I know it's hard to think beyond the World Cup at this current juncture, but all of a sudden, in you know, a month, 2 months' time, this will all be over, and I guess that the future squads will be the question. And clearly, you have the ability and the mindset to be very much a part of the Irish setup for years to come. You're only 27 as well, so I guess you've plenty of time left at the international stage, you would imagine, and hope.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I think the one thing about football is, with any moment or experience or tournament, there's always one more. There's always the next thing. So obviously last week, when I've been pushing to try and get into the squad, then the next thing is obviously to come back into club, and then you're pushing for Champions League, or you're pushing for the new season. And then there's obviously things on the international circuit as well. But right now, obviously, I've still got my World Cup hat on. But there is always those things that are sort of pushing you along and remind you that there's just no time to wallow in. And also, why would I want to miss out on the opportunity to celebrate the girls over in Australia? So there's that as well. And if you knew all the girls, you'd be saying the exact same thing. And so that's probably how I look at it.
You'd posted on Instagram, I know you'd suffered that knee injury towards the tail end of the season with United, and as I said, the timing of that is terrible. But you posted an Instagram story, I think, from Carrington, the United training ground, with your cast off for the first time in a while, and then you'd see the Aer Lingus plane heading over to Dublin, of course, for the squad selection. But do you have to then, was it, I guess, up to you to make a pitch to say, you know, I feel ready, I feel okay? Or how does that conversation happen? Because clearly, and you could see it from Vera Powell in the days leading up to the squad announcement, she was dreading having those conversations with players.
Yeah, I would not. I definitely wouldn't be jealous of those sorts of decisions that managers have to make. As a player, we only have to look after ourselves, and like you're saying, making a pitch for yourself. And so obviously I did get over on the plane, and we had a really good conversation, a really long conversation. And I put myself across the best that I could. And she has to weigh up so many things, not just one particular player. She has to weigh up how it's all going to come together. And ultimately, by the time, you know, when we left that conversation, we were able to have a hug. You know, I was able to wish the team good luck. And so I was so pleased that I got over, even just to see everyone. And then obviously the following day to that was when the squad was announced. And I saw the girls before it had been announced internally, before they knew. And, you know, it's just that anticipation for everyone, hoping that they're going to be able to get going. And so it was nice to sort of just, you know, wish people good luck on an individual level. But yeah, I did go over. Like, looking back now, it felt very foreboding, me putting a picture of Aer Lingus on my Instagram. It was one of those regional airlines as well. That's a bit kind of, you know, to each side and a bit side to side. So, but no, look, it was all sort of in the cut and thrust of football, and you know, it was all done in the right way. And I don't take any particular negative feeling off the back of that. If anything, I've sort of feel resolved with the situation, put my case across, and that was that.
Yeah, I spoke to some of the players. We did a send-off party, and then the next day as well, which would have been 2 days after the squad was announced. And it was very bittersweet for them. Yes, they were going to a World Cup. They were so excited, and they knew it was a phenomenal opportunity. But you couldn't but get the sense that they just, you know, felt bad for the players that didn't get going. What was it like afterwards when you heard the news? Did you get to spend time with them? Were you able to chat to them? That sort of thing?
So I wasn't with them anymore after they had found out. I'd sort of left a bit before that. My aunt had kindly picked me up from UCD in Dublin, and we'd went out for some lunch to sort of lick the wounds a little bit. But no, you're right. I was surprised actually how many of the girls had referenced people missing out in their posts, because I think if you looked at every national team and sort of looked at what people would say about how delighted they were, I think you'd see very, very few players that would even, not that you would anyway, but that would even think to potentially mention that it might be bittersweet. And obviously there are some girls on the team that, it would have been really, really gutting for them. Jamie Finn, for example, and obviously one of my counterparts over here, in England as well, Meg Campbell, through injury. So bits like that. So it was, I thought like, wow, that's a testament to their character as well, that would even be on their mind, on potentially the best day of their life, that the players would even have it within themselves to sort of make note of that. And I think that's all the more reason why whatever happens on the pitch in Australia, everybody should be really behind this group of players as a set of people as well.
Do you manage, Aoife, to, in the days afterwards, I guess, lean on, and I guess in professional sport, you have the opportunity to chat to sports psychologists and therapists about how you're feeling about all these things. And I guess also leaning on the other players that you mentioned there, the likes of Megan Campbell and Leanne Kiernan and Jamie Finn, all talented players who were within such a narrow margin of making this squad, same as yourself. So have you managed to talk to others, including those girls maybe, about how the feelings have materialised?
Yeah, definitely. I've chatted to a lot of the players, and I've chatted to a couple who weren't able to make the squad in the end. I was chatting to Megan yesterday, for example, and I said to her, are you able to watch the game? Because not always would people be able to watch the game so soon. Mm. And she was like, yeah, of course I'm watching it. I have to watch it. So obviously there's people are personally disappointed, but also have it within us to be like, no, we have to watch it. We're delighted for them. And bits like that. And, mentioning sort of sports psychologists and getting yourself right with your mindset and that sort of stuff. That's obviously massive as well. And the people that I've been around have said, that, you've had something that you wanted and it didn't happen. And it's sort of, what now? How can we make the best of this situation? And it's just a nice place to live in when you have that mentality.
And just looking club-wise then as well, Aoife, a brilliant year for Manchester United, and you've Champions League football as well to look forward to.
Yeah, we've got some Champions League football, which is so exciting, because it's obviously our first time doing that. And we've got into a round of the qualifying for it. So we're not quite in the group stage yet. And we're lucky, because we came second rather than third, we get to miss out one of the qualifiers. And we're lucky because it means we get more holiday. We get an extra week. The first qualifier would have been a bit earlier. So that's all helped me go to Australia as well, even if it is as a capacity as a fan rather than a footballer. So there's lots and lots of exciting things in terms of club as well that I'm really excited to. And then hopefully on the 23rd of September, massive, massive match up at the Aviva for Ireland, and I really hope that I can be involved in that.
Absolutely, touch wood. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about Alessia Russo's departure? I know a lot of United fans and players will be disappointed, but I guess that's football. These things happen. Transfers, players come and go. It's obviously disappointing for the club, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's disappointing for the club. It's disappointing for everyone. It's disappointing for me, and it's disappointing because, one, she's becoming a world class player. And two, just being around her, she's just so good to everyone. She's so nice. When I did my knee at United, she wrote me out a little card. She sent me a little anchor bracelet. She's one of those people that just she thinks about what's going under the lid with different people and different ones of us. So I'm really, really going to miss Alessia actually, and also we've got. I wish we still had her on a badger, one of the Spanish right backs. So we're going to miss her as well, but definitely Alessia. And she's only going to fly now. She's only going to thrive. And unfortunately, it's not going to be at our club, but as a friend, I'm going to watch on and be excited for her.
And just in terms of your own contract, Aoife, I know you signed a 2-year contract back in July 2021. So does this mean that you're able to give us a little bit of an update that you're going to be staying on?
I'd love to give a big expose out here. I think if I told you everything, I'd probably turn over my phone there next to my laptop and I'd be seeing all sorts of calls. But, you know, it's really exciting. This next couple of years are really, really exciting. And hopefully, you know, we're all going to find out in due course. I'm sorry to be so, so vague. I wish I could.
Tried our best.
Tell you exactly what's happened, but it's only good things, and it's only things that hopefully people will be happy with.
Brilliant.
I'm sure you weren't being vague as to who you were supporting in Croke Park last weekend, Aoife. I know you're I think your dad's from Galway and your mother's from outside Kilmaine in Mayo, so that's a bit of a controversial one, having a parent from each. But last weekend in particular, I know you would have played a lot of Gaelic football growing up with Warwickshire and that. So, I mean, how are the emotions coping in Croke Park last weekend? I'm sure it was disappointing.
Oh, it was a sickening day out. It was not what we wanted at all. That first half, there was only a point in it at half time, and I thought, well, actually I had a flight to catch, so I was hoping that it wouldn't go to extra time, because I was going to have to make a call whether to miss the flight or obviously not miss the flight but miss half time. That was where my mindset was at half time, that it could go to extra time. And obviously then it ran away from us, and, you know, it was really, you know, really, really not a good watch in the end. So that's such a shame. I had so many family down there, so we were sort of wallowing together, if you like. But I've already started the calls for Mayo for Sam 2024. I don't know if it's too soon yet, but
never too soon.
It's the anticipation that kills you. So, it was not the best day out. But I really don't think that there's anything that will match a packed out Croke Park. I love Wembley in England. Obviously, that's the biggest sort of football soccer stadium. But those feels of when you go in and it's packed out at Croke Park, there's just nothing that will beat that for me.
Because I know that Gaelic football is in the heritage. The Irish community in Birmingham there would be so, so popular. Even I think Jack Grealish would have played Gaelic football growing up as well. You'd have known Jack a little bit from primary school, am I right in saying, Aoife?
Yeah, we went to the same secondary school, and then we sort of played for rival Gaelic football teams, and we did actually go away with Warwickshire on the same team once or twice, and we managed to play in like half time at a Leinster final back, I don't know, like 15 years ago. And the game on Sunday, actually, it had two teams, one from France and one from Germany, that were playing at halftime, which I thought was really cool. And I thought they looked really good. I didn't know that they played Gaelic football in Germany. So that was quite good to watch, actually. Obviously, there's an Irish contingent over there, clearly, or else they've just been watching YouTube videos. So, no, that was really good to watch.
What was Jack Grealish like as a Gaelic footballer?
Yeah, he was great. He was class, much to my annoyance, because we would have been marking each other in the middle of the pitch. always very skillful, very technical. You know, would have had that work rate and that ability to get around the pitch as well. So, no, he was, you know, obviously the shining star of his team. You know, like I say, much to my annoyance.
And Mayo for Sam maybe next year, Aoife. And I know your uncle Pat Kelly would have played for Mayo, I think, as well, am I right in saying?
Yeah, and he's actually listening. I know that he's listening on to this, because I told him that I was going to be on. So, hi, Pat, if you're listening. Pat, my uncle Pat, he used to play for Mayo, and that just made everything all the more special and exciting. And I never forget how I feel as a kid, obviously, looking up to people who are playing sports. So I try my best to do that for sort of the young kids now, because you sort of forget how much of a special thing it is as a kid to have someone older sort of to look up to and to have a bit of a role model. So Pat has he has two kids now. One of them's called Ava, and she's sort of like not a mini me, but she's, you know, a little cousin. So I always make sure I try and, you know, give her a few United bits and stuff like that to make sure that hopefully she can feel as excited as I did when I was her age looking up to Pat.
Absolutely. Shout out to Pat this morning. Brilliant. Watching in. I think Pat won an All-Ireland club title with St Vincent as well. So a man steeped in GAA tradition. Aoife, you've been really good with your time this morning. Thanks a million. Hopefully we'll check back in with you again very soon.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Great stuff. Aoife Mannion there, Irish international, of course, Manchester United star as well. Always great to hear from.
Brilliant. Yeah. What a mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah, incredible. Even the way she's talking about kids looking up to her, niece looking up to her. Like, yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. And it's not an easy thing to have when you've had, you know, a loss like not going to a World Cup, you know, very, very tough thing to take. But wow, yeah, that was, yeah, incredible.
Especially that considering without the injury, she was a shoo-in probably for the squad.
Yeah.
You know, when you know that you would be there only for the injury. But clearly she's in a good place mentally and fair play to her.
Great
she's
to see.
Really, really interesting person to talk to as well. 8:23 a.m. on Friday mornings, OTB AM with myself and Ashley live with you until 10 o'clock. We'll be back in just a second, but I do want to bring you some more reaction from last night's match as well. Here is the player of the match, well, the Irish player of the match anyway, Ciara Caruso, speaking with our own Kathleen McNamee. Have a look.
Yeah, I mean, result 1-0, 3-0, you don't want to see that. You don't want to walk off the pitch and have played that 90 minutes, especially the 90 minutes we put into that game and see that result. So that, of course, that I feel like we have to recognize and we have to walk away and we have to feel that. We have to remember that, like, as professionals, like, that just can't happen. But those aside, like the goals aside, I think that the most important thing is that as we felt as a team, especially in that first 45 minutes, is like a feeling I haven't felt like almost ever amongst us, and just this unspoken ability to be like, know where each other are, our link-up play, high balls, trusting each other, moving up the pitch physically, and like imposing ourselves on an opponent like that, a top five opponent in the world. It's very impressive, and it's something that I'm very happy to take away from the game.
Yeah, it felt like sometimes in the past we've relied on very good individual performances, and like that could have been any number of players in the squad. They just had a good day, but that first 45 minutes until the goals really felt like everyone was moving in tandem with each other.
Yeah, I'm glad that you felt that too. I've been like, as moving interviews, I'm trying. It's really hard to describe because it's almost like this, it's this unspoken ability to like trust that when a ball comes into me, I know where a pocket player is going to be. Trust that when Lou passes or picks up a ball, I know she wants to go along with it, and I know Katie wants to whip a ball down the line, or she wants to pull it back around.
Yeah, 8:25 a.m. on Friday morning, so to BM. That was Ciara Caruso there chatting to Kathleen McNamee. She's a breath of fresh air, Ciara.
Yeah,
she?
She's great. And I was actually looking there at her top to see was the sky the right way round. Did you see this?
What was that about?
Yeah.
I saw it during the National Anthem. Yeah, some of the skies were upside down.
On Katie McCabe's top anyway, that was the one that was going around Twitter, that it was just printed wrong.
That was bizarre.
Bizarre.
I don't know how that happens.
Yeah.
Castore, of course, the new sponsors, I guess, and kit manufacturers.
Mm.
But yeah, to see the sky thing upside down was a little bit of a...
They've been known to have these little issues in the past as well. Yeah. So yeah, hopefully it's rectified and they're not the tops that they're all bringing with them maybe to... I'm guessing it is though, to the World Cup.
Yeah, I know, unless they can print some new ones pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Some comments coming in. Keep your comments, by the way, coming in on the YouTube stream. We're with you until 10 o'clock this morning. Shifty Lad says, Aoife speaking very well. Maybe she'll be a panellist out there. Shame to miss out on having to pay to be out there, which I know is disappointing. Something she probably never had to think that she would be dealing with. Dan Delaney says, France were top class. Ireland looked a little bit off it. Hopefully this changes for the World Cup, but it's hard to see in a short period of time. I know what you're saying. I'd like to think, obviously, the Colombia game behind closed doors. I think Vera said last night she's going to play two different 11s. That's what I gather, two different 11s, two different halves. In that friendly, it's, of course, behind closed doors. But the Australia game, hopefully they'll have picked up and learned from it. Even if they go a goal behind, and again, touch wood, that doesn't happen. They'll have maybe learned how to cope with that.
Yeah, again, what we were saying, the first 40 minutes, you know, if the goal had went in, all of these things, but there was enough positivity there, I think, that you can build on that. They have the players, like, if you look at the talent that's within that squad. So I would be keeping definitely optimistic, and yeah, their group, they can definitely get something out of it, I feel.
Yeah, 100%. Emma's telling us, you can't get the kits. I bought it weeks ago for my niece, it's still waiting. Nightmare.
You heard this as well, that there's just such a backlog.
Because everyone's trying to get kits for the World Cup, for their kids or nephews or whatever.
Be ready for this, you know, we want everyone kitted out.
100%. And you saw that, it was lovely to see last night. That's the great thing about the women's matches like last night is they give so much time to the fans. And like, there's so many kids just waiting for autographs and selfies. I don't know how long they have to wait after the matches before they can get off the pitch, but it seems a significant period of time at each game.
It's just incredible. Swarmed. And the girls go straight over and they start signing and getting the pictures and the whole lot. And that means a hell of a lot. Like, I've met a lot of them now throughout the games, and the same ones are constantly coming back. And the girls even know them now at this point.
you know, because they're constantly at every game. And it's brilliant to see. And that's only going to inspire them. And yeah, there's loads of little boys there as well, which is brilliant to see. Mm. They're taking an interest, and that's how it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. I keep the comments coming in on the match last night. Greg Caffrey, by the way, separately says, Shane, Monaghan are more jammy than a jammy dodger. But McManus is a legend. I don't know how to take that one. McManus is a legend. You don't get to an All-Ireland semi-final if you're jammy. Let's just say that. I'm on some good wins.
No, Vinnie Corey's doing a serious job, Shane.
Quality. And yeah. He's my former Leaving Cert economics teacher as well. So
no way.
Shout out to Vinnie Corey.
Didn't know that.
Yes, there you go. We're going to get him in the studio, no doubt, after Monaghan win the final. I was saying it to Connor as well. I was like, we can bring the trophy in maybe.
Yeah.
Show and tell. Mm. Sam Maguire in hand.
Yeah, I'll come in that day.
Yeah, getting ahead of myself a little bit. But of course, it's just great to have a semi-final to look forward to.
He's not afraid to make the big calls as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, McManus coming off the bench, that this is the first year of him doing this in Championship. Yeah. That was a massive call in itself.
Oh, huge.
He played alongside him, you know, obviously. So, yeah, it's hard to do that to a former teammate.
Big time. There's two big games to look forward to this weekend in the Hurling Championship as well, the semi-finals at 8:28 a.m. on this Friday morning's OTB. And we're going to look ahead to Clare Kilkenny now. We did Galway Limerick significantly yesterday. Delighted to welcome to the show this morning the former Kilkenny star, Kieran Joyce, and Brendan Bugler, who of course won the All-Ireland with Clare back in 2013. Brendan and Kieran, good morning. How are things?
Morning, folks.
Good morning.
Thanks for hopping on, lads. Much appreciated, as per usual. Brendan, might start with yourself. The injury concerns, I guess, with Clare coming into this game were some of the big talking points. David McInerney and John Conlon, though, look like they will be fit. So that's a huge boost for Clare.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not sure what the story with Connor is going to be. I know he's named to start, but I suppose we won't really know until throw-in on Sunday. But look, when you're going up to an All-Ireland semi-final, you're playing Kilkenny, you're after losing to them by 12 points last year. You know, the one thing Clare we want is a full squad to pick from. And, you know, when you have players like Conor Cleary, like John Conlon, like David McInerney, who have so much experience, you know, that's Clare need that on Sunday. So if we have all three of them, great. If we have two out of three of them, I'd say that'll probably be a little bit more realistic. But you know, they're really, really, really good players for Clare, and I suppose they have that physical presence against a physical Kilkenny half forward. So look, it's great news if we have all three of them.
Yeah, for Brendan, for Conor Cleary, he was named to start in the Munster final, if I remember correctly. He didn't play in the end, but his absence was felt. Like, how much of a loss would he be if he's not out there this weekend?
Yeah, I think, Ashley, right, like, you look at the full-back position for Clare for a number of years prior to Brian Lowen coming in, and, you know, there was a lot of chopping and changing, and it was a problem position for us, you know, and Conor played a lot of his hurling out at centre-back, and he, you know, Brian decided to put him back full back and had faith in him there, and he's really excelled. And the thing about Conor is he just goes about his business so quietly, and he does a great, great job for Clare. And I suppose it wasn't until we were missing him, he hardly ever misses a game, you see, and it wasn't until we were missing him that you really felt his loss, you know. So I suppose, especially in the Munster final, Conor he'd been used to marking Aaron Gillane on a numerous of occasions, and you know, more often than not, you know, he broke even or got better than Aaron. So, sure. Obviously, like, his presence was clearly, or his absence was clearly, you know, felt come Munster final day. But, you know, he suffered a serious injury. I just hope that it's cleared up and he will be available for Sunday.
Kieran, Kilkenny in an All-Ireland semi-final just appears to be a different prospect to Kilkenny at some other points in the year. A big game team. Paul Murphy was chatting to Joe and off the ball during the week, and he was talking about how he never lost in an All-Ireland semi-final. Is that something that'll be in these Kilkenny players' heads as well? Because even if you look at the performance last year, 12-point win, as Brendan says, maybe the gap has been narrowed, though, you'd imagine, between now and then. But still, a semi-final, Kilkenny will be confident.
They will, of course. Look, it's a sense of deja vu. I remember last year up at the match, and I think once John Connell wasn't in the team, and you know, we knew at half time the kind of game was effectively over, but it's going to be a different prospect this year. I think Clare are in a lot better position. Kilkenny, I suppose, is the unknown on our side, I suppose, because we haven't had a settled 15 there for the last number of games. We've had a few injuries. A couple of players have stepped up. Tom Phelan has come into the game. David Blanchfield has really established himself this year. You know, we kind of only seen glimpses of him in the All-Ireland final last year when he came on, so It'll be interesting to see what starting 15 is and how Kilkenny will feel that matchup. I suppose from Kilkenny's point of view, They've shown glimpses of the old Kilkenny. They're clinical at times, but the one worry was that they've let teams back into games, especially the turnaround that Galway had, even though I suppose we got the win. Produced as however it was, but you know, that's probably the one thing they're going to worry about in terms of purple patch for Clare. You know, can Clare put us to the sword? You know, are we going to be able to sustain that? It's I think it's going to be a completely different game to last year. I think it's going to be really interesting in terms of the matchups, how Kilkenny will figure their matchups, because I know, look, last year Kilkenny, you know, Mikey Butler took Tony Kelly. You know, Hugh Lawler was on Peter Duggan at the time, and they really just nullified the threat that Clare had. But Clare probably have a couple more strings to their bow this year. But I suppose Kilkenny will be looking at how they're going to get the matchups. Will Richie Reid be playing back? Richie Reid sweeped up a lot of ball last year. You know, hopefully he's fit to come back in. So hopefully we'll know probably tonight. I think they'll name the team, so we'll know tonight then how we're going to be lined up.
Go ahead, Ashton.
I'm just on that point. I'm wondering, do you think Mikey Butler will take on Tony Kelly again this year?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd say he probably relished the challenge, you know, even going up and getting the goal in the Leicester final, so he's quite adept. He can play anything. And I suppose last year, he's been an awful lot in midfield, you know, and he's winning ball, and he was given the right option, where I know sometimes myself and Paul are ever in midfield at times back in the day, we'd just go route one, put snow on it into the air, but he's a different prospect, you know, and he kind of plays with no fear, and you can see that. So ideally, they probably would, you know. But it depends on how Clare will line out. Like, Shane O'Donnell is lined out for full forward. You know, look, we know Hugh Lawler is very established. Whoever goes in on Hugh, you know, he should be able to handle. You know, will they put Peter Duggan in there? You know, so it depends on the matchups, and it depends on whether Kilkenny are going to follow him or whether they're going to stay in their positions and obviously mark whoever comes in. But I would assume, I suppose, what worked last year, will probably, you know, they'll probably try that at the start and see. But I suppose the Kilkenny full back line, you know, Tommy Walsh in there is very established guy as well. He's, you know, he's very tidy hurler, and that. So it depends on how Clare line up, especially. And I suppose the first 5 minutes you'll really see in terms of how they line up, who's going to take who, and will they start following the man.
Tony Kelly, Brendan, has we've probably run out of superlatives to use to describe Tony Kelly, but maybe throw us out a few more there. Like, what's he like to play with, I guess, but also he's just added so much to this Clare team, and 3-4 the last day in the quarterfinal against Dublin, and some people were saying he didn't even play that well.
So we all know how good Tony is. He's a terrific player, terrific hurler. What Tony has been doing the last 3 or 4 years for Clare, we had seen that at club level for, you know, 5 years previous to that. And I suppose we'd seen that before that, back in 2013 when he got Player of the Year. So I suppose he's really, since he's become captain, he's really grown into that leadership role. And his performances have been, you know, over the last couple of years, it's been all-star. It's been all-star stuff every single year. So he's a huge, huge, huge player for Clare. And I think last year, a lot of people are forgetting that, you know, going into that All-Ireland semi-final, Tony did pick up a little bit of a knock, you know, in the extra time period of the Munster final last year, and that kind of carried into the Wexford game and obviously into the All-Ireland semi-final. So he wasn't at full tilt, he wasn't at 100%, and I know Mikey Butler had a good game that day, but, you know, this year is just a completely different year. And I think Dicey was on about there, about matchups here and matchups there. We won't know what's going to be the story until the ball is thrown in on Sunday, and that's the reality of it. Like, you know, I'd imagine Kilkenny will look at the Clare full back line if Conor Cleary isn't there, and they might bombard a couple of high balls in there and test out the boys, and, you know, we're going to have to be really, really on it there. But I suppose from a Clare point of view, going up last year, you know, you were really, really confident on the back of a real good Munster campaign, and then, you know, after 15 minutes Kilkenny just came out and they absolutely just blitzed us. So I suppose this year what I'm looking at is to see where the energy level's at. You know, and I was really, really happy, I suppose, leaving the Gaelic grounds against Dublin, that there was no wane in energy levels, you know, compared to the Munster Championship. And, you know, we were on it from the start, albeit, you know, the accuracy wasn't on song, especially in the first half. But the energy levels were there. And if they're not there, well, you're not going to give yourself, you know, much of an opportunity to win. And you could see that with Tipperary. You could see the same with Tipperary and Galway in the first 20 minutes. Galway were on it. They were burning the intensity. They were burning the energy. And Tip couldn't handle it, you know. And Liam Sheedy came out in the Sunday game afterwards, and he mentioned a stat about the number of turnovers and tackles Tipperary had against Limerick in the Munster Championship in comparison to what they had against Galway, and it was just chalk and cheese. So That's the big thing. It's about, you know, Kilkenny are going to bring it, and I just hope that we can bring it as well.
And Brendan, what's your view on the free-taken situation with Clare? Is that a concern for Brian Lowen? I know they changed it up a little bit in the Munster final, and Tony went on them in the end. You know, Aidan McCarthy, Mark Rogers has been on them as well. So what is your view on all of that?
Yeah, it's look, we have good free takers in Clare, Aisling. Aidan obviously is out the next day, so Mark Rogers was on him against Dublin, and he struck him really, really well. So I'd have no problem with Mark hitting threes in an All Ireland semi final. He has that temperament. The one thing Mark has, you know, right throughout his underage career, you know, he's got a lot of attention from defenders in this game and that game at club level, and his temperament is exceptional. And you know, you need that as well when you're a free taker, that excellent temperament, and he's got it. So I'd imagine I'd see him starting in the freeze anyway. And if things are going bad, we also have Tony as backup there anyway.
I suppose, Kieran, we touched on Tony Kelly with Brendan. We should touch on TJ Reid with yourself as well, and it'd be rude of us not to. How he's still producing what he's producing at this stage is quite remarkable. How can you see Clare marshalling him? I don't want you, obviously you're not going to give away state secrets and tell Clare how to do it, but if you were the Clare manager, I guess, how would you deal with TJ Reid?
That's a question. I suppose TJ last year, he had an exceptional semi-final and final. A lot of people are saying after the final with TJ, oh, you know, form might have been there, you know, when they reached, so and throughout the year, TJ, I suppose, you know, he was showing glimpses of it. I suppose what we expect, and that's the problem with the likes of TJ and Tony Kelly, they have exceptional games, and you know, that's the standard, and if they don't hit that standard every day, you say that they have a poor game. But I suppose TJ, you know, the amount of assists, the amount of puckouts he wins and bring other players into game, you know, has been phenomenal for him. So he will be a route one distributor for Kilkenny. We go along an awful lot, we play through the lines at times, but I suppose the one concern I have for Kenny is at times that, you know, our half forward line at times, we didn't break the lines there against Galway. It took Wally Welsh to come on and really bring a big influence on that. You know, he broke the line a couple of times. You know, we got a goal from it from him. And then even, I think, Dave Blanchard won a ball, he broke the line as well. And then Mikey Butler was there to give it to us. So we need Kenny to be breaking the lines against Clare, because we know Clare have an established half-back line. You know, if that half-back line starts, you know, they will, you know, putting ball down top of the grind, it has really come on the last year or two. You know, we're not going to have much headway. So TJ obviously is the option in the full forward line. He has exceptional hands. But I would say, if you're ever caught in front of TJ, you're in trouble. You always need to be behind him. He's just a great guy to win a ball, and he finds his catch at the last second. So I'd say for any Clare man, you want to make sure he's always behind TJ and always he's in front of the goal instead of having TJ in front of the goal.
Another dangerous aspect as well, he's 5 points behind Patrick Horgan for the all-time leading scorer, so maybe that's something that'll be in the back of his mind as well.
Yeah, oh yeah. You probably heard stories of TJ, like, you know, he talks when he betrays that kind of stuff, he G's himself up, and he, you know, he kind of has many mind game competitions with himself as well. I think Paul used that there a couple of weeks ago, but yeah, TJ's that sort of character, you know. He'll think about it, you know, but he won't see that as be all end all. He's, I suppose TJ is a pure team player. He's probably the most selfless player I've seen in terms of he wins a ball. Because his first instinct is not a score. His first instinct is to look around and see if a killer passes on. Mm. So we've seen that happen. Whereas, you know, other players might get the ball and might think, oh, I'll take my score here. TJ scores, needs to see if it's a goal on first. No goal on first, then he takes the score. So he probably is, and that's why Kilkenny has been so dependent on maybe the last 5 or 6 years. You know, Mark Jones has been there in the last couple of years, and he could be a goal threat. Obviously, Owen Cody's there as well, really goal threats. And they have kind of stemmed the flow because the dependency is not really on TJ there. I suppose TJ is still a route one. You know, he's that player that wins 30 ball. He's that player that wins a 60-40 ball that sometimes you think to yourself, other players probably won't win, TJ will win. And he'll, you know, he picked the right option. And like, even in the Leinster final there, you know, that chaotic corner seat there where the ball allowed to try to pick the ball, and TJ actually lost his hurl. He went down, he attacked the lad with no hurley, he picked back up the hurley. He eventually then won the ball, and I think it was passed it off, and then I think it was It wasn't easy to pass in, but the thing about it is, you know, that was the 75th minute. You know, he had the wherewithal to not foul, but, you know, get the lads to huddle in, you know, and that's the kind of experience he brings.
Yeah.
And was for us, the last game, you know, Chris Connor Fogarty came in, you know, Connor had the feature and week out when he came in, he'd done a big job in midfield, you know, obviously Wally came on, most of the old guard, and obviously come on then and still the limelight, you know, but like that's great, but the experience is there, youth is there as well, so it's a nice blend. But the one thing is, yeah, it depends on TJ still, we're hoping he has a great debut final, you know, and we probably will need him to have a 7 or an 8 out of 10 to get over Clare.
Brendan, the wide situation for Clare, is that a concern going forward? Because even in the win over Dublin early on in the game, especially, you know, the shooting accuracy just wasn't exactly there. But is that something? I guess it's something that can be stamped out of the game in training. You know, you can work on that. So at least it's something that can be fixed. But was it a concern? I guess so far this season.
I don't think it was a concern so far this season, Shane, but it was a little bit of a concern against Dublin. And I think going forward to this game, it's definitely something they'll have probably looked at in training and might have done a lot of shooting drills, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it was funny in the Gaelic grounds that evening because all four teams were guilty of really bad wides. You know, in the Galway Tipperary game, you know, it was the exact same story. You know, some ridiculous wides that you usually wouldn't see from, you know, top quality players. So I think there was something in the wind or the way it was swirling around in the Gaelic grounds that evening. So, you know, when you're leaving after a win and after scoring 5-26, I don't think you're going to look at the shooting efficiency and think, oh, this is a major, major concern. But look, if you're nitpicking and you're looking at aspects where you can improve, of course, you're going to look at that. And I think when you look back to 12 months ago, especially in the first half, Kilkenny, I think, to the best of my knowledge, with only one wide, maybe two wides, right? And then down the other side, we were hitting with a lot of uncharacteristic wides. Kilkenny's shooting efficiency was just off the charts in the first half. Now, look, in the second half, we would have beaten them in the second half, but obviously it wasn't enough, and they still came out and beat those 12 points. So, yeah, when you get into Croke Park, you know, as we've seen this season, it's just such fine margins, and it's a ball here, it's a ball there, it's a point here, it's a point there. So when you're looking at everything and all these fine margins, when it comes to shooting efficiency, and Brian alluded to that after the Munster final as well against Limerick, that it just wasn't good enough. When you're looking at everything, it needs to be on point on Sunday.
Yeah, going into the game, Brendan, how does it feel in Clare? Like, what's the buzz like? I suppose talking to people, they would think the Clare maybe are slight favourites going in. They've been the team of the championship so far, I would say. What does it feel like in Clare? Are you confident?
I think wary more than anything, Aisling. Like, you have to be realistic here as well. And I've said it numerous times here in the last 10 minutes about the fact that Kilkenny beat Clare last year by 12 points in an All-Ireland semi-final. You know, and if Clare can go and Clare can turn around that, it's going to see, geez, you know, this team has come on leaps and bounds in 12 months. I do think we're going into the game in a better position than we would have gone into it last year. But, you know, there's a lot of aspects, there's a lot of things to take into consideration. I think the Croke Park thing is one. You know, Kilkenny are well used to playing in Croke Park. Kilkenny are well used to winning in Croke Park. Clare, yeah, we were up there in 2018. We were up there last year, but we didn't win either of those games. And the last time we won was back in 2013. So there's a reason why Brian and the management team looked for the Munster final to be played in the Gaelic grounds. And that was because of the familiarity with the Gaelic grounds, you know, the order of the day, the routine, eating times, et cetera, et cetera. Those Kilkenny boys are well used to traveling to Croke Park, and it's just, you know, it's different for Clare. You know, it's different for Clare going up there. And I just hope we have learned from the experience of going up there last year and playing in All-Ireland semi-final, and hopefully can rectify the wrongs this time around. But really, Aisling, to answer your question, yeah, confident, but really, really wary. You know, you're playing a team like Kilkenny. We've only beaten them once ever in championships. So, yeah, that's the way it is.
Kieran, it was never going to be an easy job coming in off the back of Brian Cody's tenure with Kilkenny, but yeah. Derek Ling has certainly so far this year done a fairly decent job, it has to be said. You would have been involved when Derek was selector under Brian, so I guess no surprise that he's come on leaps and bounds and I guess, taken over that mantle with ease.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, look, absolutely. You know, he stepped in, and obviously, you know, does hasn't been a massive change in, I suppose, in the panel, I suppose, yet, in the terms of the rebuilding piece. But yeah, look, Derry could have a good relationship built up with a lot of them guys. You know, he was obviously involved with under Brian there for a number of years. I suppose his probably management style is a little bit different to Brian. You know, he'd probably be more talkative to the players and that kind of stuff in terms of interactions. And I suppose the next way, I suppose, how management is kind of going. And obviously he brought in a very good backroom team. You know, there's a lot of experience there in the backroom team. You know, you look at Peter Barry there. You know, he's a very, very good coach. Even at club level with James Stevens there, you know, he's been highly regarded there for the last number of years. And obviously Michael Rice, you know, we all know Michael Rice's, you know, pedigree with Kilkenny as well. So a lot of them guys came in for obviously from the under-20s scene, and I suppose they kind of broke the back in terms of winning All-Ireland with the under-20s, because, you know, the last time we actually won All-Ireland under-20s, I was playing, you know, that was, I think it was 2008, like, you know, we'd lost three finals since, and that was kind of in Kilkenny was kind of unusual, you know, so that was kind of a great kind of watershed moment, I suppose, for Kilkenny again, these new underage that were starting to win under-20s again. And, you know, that team then obviously progressed into the senior ranks, and, you know, he's there, you know, and I suppose there's plenty of players coming. Hopefully we'll see that, I suppose. But at the moment, you know, he's able to get the most out of the team that he has. He's managing the older cohort, which is important as well. You know, he has them kind of peaking at the right time. And I suppose that's what Kilkenny do. You know, we're very good at that. You know, peak for semi-finals, finals, you know, at fitness level, at intensity level, you know, and you kind of go up through the gears. And that's what they look like they're doing at the moment. And, you know, if we have a full-strength panel and a full-strength team and, you know, pick the starting 15 that we want, you know, I think we'll be there. So fingers crossed that we get that.
It feels that a very dangerous prospect to have a Kilkenny team going into an All-Ireland semi-final as maybe slight underdogs.
Yeah, well, actually, we'll take that. We love being called underdogs. So we will. But no, absolutely, I think, you know, I think the mood in Kilkenny is, you know, we all know that last year's game, you know, it won't be that way. We all know, look, Clare probably, you know, the Munster Championship, they've come through. You know, they are a very weathered team. You know, they are, you know, physically weathered as well, you know, in terms of some of the games. And even, you know, the games at Limerick as well, the intensity, you know, some of those games, I suppose, we haven't seen, I suppose, for the year. You know, has Kilkenny experienced that yet? We probably haven't. You know, we had glimpses of it there against Galway. So, you know, that's probably the one thing, you know, that you'd say, you know, has Kilkenny been really tested like Clare have been tested yet? And that, and, you know, that could come in the semi-finals, you know, will we be up for it? Absolutely. You know, hopefully we'll just have the legs and we'll have the mentality to, you know, match that intensity that we think Clare is going to bring.
Briefly, lads, before we let you go, we should get the predictions. Starting with yourself, Brendan, tell us who the two finalists are going to be. You can tell us the winner of Galway Limerick as well, sure.
Sure, look, like, there probably won't be a puck of a ball between Galway or Limerick. There probably won't be a puck of a ball between Clare and Kilkenny. If I was to pick the Galway one, I'd probably say Limerick. I'd probably say Limerick by a couple of points. Just because they have a know-how, they know how to eke out results. And when Limerick get to Croke Park, they're just they're serious outfit. So I'll probably go for Limerick in that one. With our one, it's a lot more difficult because, as I said, I'm just hoping that Clare bring a performance that has bundles of energy like they have shown in the Munster Championship, and I do believe that. We didn't bring that last year, and if we can bring that this year, I do believe we'll be in with a chance. But you'd have to say, I don't know where they're coming up with Clare as being favourites for this game. They can hear after winning the Leinster Championship. They lost an All-Ireland final last year by less than a puck of a ball. Like and they beat Clare by 12 points last year. So I think the bookies, if they're putting Clare as favourites, they've got to have a chat to John there about the odds there, will you? I think they've gotten well wrong, but... yeah, I think if we can deliver a performance, I'll be hopeful that we'll be thereabouts. But yeah, sure, look, if I had to pick it, I'd go Clare Limerick.
Lovely. You're off that fence, Kieran, with yourself?
Oh yeah, Bugs as well used to going on the fence, so he's in his long grass. I think with the Galway Limerick game, you know, I suppose we haven't seen the level of consistency of Galway to say that, you know, can they stay with Limerick, you know, for 70 minutes? I don't know. You know, you just don't know. You know, with Galway, they could come out one day and they could beat any team in the country. Another day, then, you know, they show glimpses of it, but the consistency is not there. But look, we do know what Limerick have. They have consistency. They've shown that throughout. So that's why, you know, I would see Limerick would be the favourites there. I'd see Limerick probably coming through that. On the other side, Clare Kilkenny, I do think it'd be an awful lot more closer game. I think obviously for Kilkenny to win, we need to score goals, and that's the big thing. That's obviously for us, we have been scoring goals. Matthew Keown, I suppose, has had a hamstring issue there. So word from the camp is everyone's fully fit and able, apart from McCary, who's out for illness reasons. But you know, I think if we have the full start of 15 that we want, that have to start, and the experience there, you know, I think it's going to be a fantastic battle. You know, like even the cornerbacks for Rory Hayes and Hogan are, you know, two exceptional cornerbacks for Clare, and the battles they're going to have with Massey and Owen Cody are going to be, you know, they're going to be brilliant. So, you know, that's the kind of the key battle. You know, if we can get on top, you know, in a couple of key areas, I think we will win it. I think obviously from us, it's obviously to stem the tide. You know, if we get the matchups and subdue Tony and, you know, Mark Rogers, and, you know, even Ian Galvin is a fantastic player as well. You know, he came on, he had a massive impact there the last day. So, you know, if we can curtail a couple of those key men for them, Kilkenny will, you know, dog the game out. So I would say Kilkenny by three.
Kilkenny by three, okay. Interesting. So a Limerick-Kilkenny final for you, Kieran, and a Limerick-Clare final for you, Brendan. At least your arses aren't sore anymore. You're off that fence. Fair play to you. You're not sitting on it anymore. Well done. We got you there eventually, lad. Fair play. Kieran, Brendan, enjoy the match of the weekend. Thanks a million.
Thanks so much, guys.
Good stuff, lads. Kieran Joyce, former Kilkenny hurler, and Brendan Bugler, of course, formerly of Clare. You kind of have to predict your own county, don't you?
Yeah, it was coming. Eventually
they'll get there. They'll obviously play up the other team.
Yeah.
And then they'll say, oh yeah, but I think we'll win by
yeah,
a point or two.
But even on the point of what Brendan was saying, I don't know where they're getting these odds and how Clare are these slight favourites, but Paul Murphy, former Uncle Kenny hurler, on the hurling pod, he said that, you know what, even next year, whoever comes through Munster will probably always be slight favourites,
yeah,
because everybody looks at them to say they've had the harder games, the harder way through, you know, they came through Munster. So maybe that's always the way it's going to be, whether it's Dublin, Galway, Kilkenny, whoever it is, that'll be there next year, whoever's the Leinster, you know, winners. It'll probably always be that way. But yeah, I know Kilkenny going in as maybe underdogs is
rarely happens in a semi-final.
Dangerous.
Like, we were
yeah,
chatting in our post-show production meeting yesterday and saying that the conversation all year has been the dominance of the Munster Championship over the Leinster Championship. I mean, how funny and ironic would it be if Kilkenny and Galway progressed to the All-Ireland final this weekend, you know? After all that talk
absolutely
about Munster's dominance over
yeah,
Leinster. You never know. It's unlikely, but both slight underdogs, I guess, with the bookies.
Who are you going with?
We have the quick picks, the GA quick picks later on this morning that
yeah,
I have to pick, which I'm currently leading, by the way.
Sorry, I don't know how I'm not in them. I was,
you should be.
Yeah, up there last year. I think I came second.
Right.
Well, Tommy
first
cheated.
Loser. Yeah,
it was
yeah,
me and Will. So yeah, I'll have that chat with Colin Boog after this, yeah.
You see, I'm doing so. You see, I picked Monaghan. I was the only one to pick Monaghan last weekend, which was, again, you have to opt for your own county.
Fair play.
I'll probably be the person who opts for Monaghan against Dublin as well. It's just one of those. I can't possibly predict against my home county. This weekend, I'm thinking, look, I'm half Galway. I'd love to be opting for Galway. I just think this is possibly the end of the road. One score game, I think it will be, but Limerick for me. And the Kilkenny Clare game.
Very tough.
I can't call that one.
Yeah.
I'm slightly edging towards Kilkenny, which might surprise some people, but yeah, I think maybe possibly a Limerick Kilkenny final.
Yeah, it's hard to look past Kilkenny, I think. You know, obviously going off experience, TJ Reid, everything that goes with it. But
yeah,
I don't know, is it written in the stars to have Limerick Clare All-Ireland final?
Yeah, look, I'd be happy with any of these finals because regardless of the outcomes this weekend, the final is going to be a cracker because either of those outcomes is going to be brilliant.
Yeah.
We move on, 8:55am, 8:56am now on Friday morning's OTBAM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off The Ball. Myself and Aisling live with you until 10 o'clock this morning. Time to turn our attention to rugby. I should mention Up The Hill for Jack and Jill 2023. In aid of the Jack and Jill Children's Foundation, and kindly supported by Abbott, is urging people to take to the hills throughout the summer in support of local Jack and Jill families. Every €18 registration fee will help fund 1 hour of in-home nursing care and end-of-life support for over 400 children with highly complex, life-limiting medical conditions countrywide. Organisers are urging people to team up with family, friends, neighbours and colleagues and go up the hill for Jack and Jill this summer. To register your Up The Hill fundraising event, visit www.jackandjill.ie. Delighted to be joined on the show this morning by the Connacht captain and Jack and Jill ambassador, Jack Hardy. Jack, good morning. How are things?
Thanks for having me, Shane. Aisling, how's it going?
Keeping well, man. Keeping well. Thanks for hopping on. You've been involved with this initiative for a bit of time. It's an absolutely wonderful fundraising initiative and something that's clearly massively important and important to you as well.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose to give you context, it's kind of been in in and around our family for quite a while in regarding my dad used to work with Jonathan, the founder, 20, 25 years ago, and then it was founded. So it was always something that was kind of there in the background, whether it be supporting in whatever small way we could. And then an opportunity came to come on an official capacity then 2 years ago. I was invited to the Family Fun Day in Palmerstown House, and kind of from there just took off. So it's been brilliant. We did up the hill last year. It was last October we did it. It was actually after one of the, I think it was after the Munster game, after we came back from South Africa. So I was in the depths, the depths of the Galway winter or Galway autumn. So we'd won the night before, and myself and a couple of the teammates and family did it. And we woke up and it was kind of your typical Galway weather. So it's great. They've moved it now, I think, to more of the summer months and the coming months in front of us. So I'm looking forward to doing it on a nice sunny day.
I think it's the 9th annual up the hill for Jack and Jill being organised, and they're hoping to raise €75,000 as well for these vital services for more than 400 families nationwide. That apparently is the equivalent of over 4,000 hours of in-home nursing care and respite support. So I guess it just goes to show you, Jack, that the money here clearly goes a long way.
Yeah, definitely. At the launch the other day, we were up in St. Stephen's Green in Dublin. I had the privilege to meet Grayson, who's a child who's availing of the services with Jack and Jill. And I was just speaking to his mother, and she was like, he on the way to St. Stephen's Green that morning, he had two seizures. And she kind of spoke to us about, I suppose, what Jack and Jill means to her. The fact that, as you spoke about there, them couple of hours that she can get, whether it be to, you know, get an extra couple of hours sleep, whether it be to go and get her nails done, her hair done. It's kind of them small little things in terms of the breathing space she gets that allows her to, I suppose, to be at her best for Grace. And so, yeah, it's been a massive honour to be involved, and I'm looking forward to continuing and helping in any capacity I can.
And Jack, how do people get involved? Can it be any hill, any mountain? Is it up to yourself?
Yeah, Anton, there's nothing too big or too small. I suppose if there's anyone in the Galway area when we're going to do it, I'll probably set something up on Twitter, Instagram the next couple of weeks, and hopefully we can get a good number of people out. If it's someone, it could even just be a walk. I know there's a man in Loughrea this weekend. He's pushing a hospital trolley 30 kilometres to raise awareness as well. So I know there's some children building kind of bun hills as well. So the more innovative it is, the more kind of outside of the box it is, I think, is anything to do with it that it helps would be great.
So what was the hill after you played Munster like?
we did Diamond Hill out in Galway.
Fair play. So how far is that?
Pardon?
How far is that?
It's about an hour's drive out, and then when we got there, it was about an hour up. An hour and a half up, an hour but down. So actually, it wasn't too taxing. The year before when I kind of came involved, foolishly, I'd left it to kind of the last few weekends in October. And again, it was the day after we played Scarlets and didn't do any planning. So I'd highly recommend that people would plan. So I was driving out to Connemara and I was like trying to find the hills. I just parked on the side of the road and then hopped a fence and ended up being up to my knees in bog. So I think if anyone is planning on doing something to the equivalent of that, I think planning and obviously get going with a good couple of people, don't do what I did.
Bring the wellies as well.
Yeah.
The waiters, yeah. How do you feel about the season now, Jack, that it's all done and dusted? I guess I'm thinking back immediately to Connacht season. You think of the famous win against Ulster up in Kingspan Stadium in Belfast and your 15 points from the boot that day to seal a very famous win. Is that one of the highlights of the season, or how do you reflect generally in the season?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I think after we played in South Africa, I think there was a massive level of disappointment. I think it was an opportunity that we had missed. And I think that was the general consensus amongst the group. I think what the Ulster game has given us is that confidence in knockout games. I know there was quite a few up until that point where we hadn't got over the line. And to get over the line, albeit not being at our best, when we actually played up in Ravenhill, it's a massive shot in the arm for us starting this year. We started back on Monday, so we're back in the thick of it already. Great to welcome a couple of new faces in also.
there was a smirk on your face there when you said we're back on last Monday. Like, I imagine that smirk doesn't convey your true feelings about being back, but this time of year I'd imagine it's fairly tough pre-season, usually not enjoyable.
I suppose it's, you know what, it's kind of speaking to a lot of fellas here, we obviously had 5 weeks off, and obviously a lot, most of us have kind of been in this rugby environment for quite a long time, and your creatures of habit and kind of the missing out routine, I know that's what, something that a lot of lads were longing to get back to, but yeah, you're right, as you said, the running and the up downs and whatnot, it's obviously a shot to the system initially, but you know, it's going to be all well worth it. Obviously Pete and then the new backroom team are there, so getting to grips with the new kind of ideas that they have and the new players that we have as well, so it's a lot of familiarity, but then there's obviously a lot of new things as well.
Yeah, it's probably something a little bit different is not having Andy Friend around anymore. Obviously 5 years there and you've quite a close relationship with him. What's it like to not have him there anymore?
Yeah, I was actually only speaking to him. I sent him a text when we started back on Monday, and I was just like, look, we're starting on another journey. I hope you're enjoying yours. I think he sent me, I think it was in Switzerland or Austria, it was a picture of the the side of the lake. So he's having a great old time regardless. But yeah, obviously there's the coaching side of it and the mentor side of it that Andy provided to us, but also the friendship. You know, when he left, I went out for a meal with him and his wife Kerry, and you're lucky enough to come across different personalities when you're playing rugby, and there's obviously some people, you know, you're not going to be able to keep in contact with everyone, but Friendy's definitely one of the people that the majority of us will stay in contact with, whether that be when we go down to Australia and meet him, or when he kind of comes back. He's due to come back in November, so it'll be great to catch up with him again.
He seems to have changed the attitude around Connacht as well, Jack. Like, even just his connection with the fans and players as well, but I know he would have taken you out to different camps in Ballina and Gorton across the province as well. So it wasn't just a Galway focus. It was very much a connect with, you know, Connacht fans across the province as well, which was great to see.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think it's across the world for me there. It's about, like, representing. I know some people from outside of Connacht may kind of see Connacht is, I suppose, a Galway club, but you know, we're very proud of representing all the counties. We've for our, like, mini groups now this season, we obviously have split the group into six, so we've the five counties, and then we made the Gaeltacht as our six. So we're planning on doing a jersey day. So we've been trying to get through to Roscommon GAA to get 10 Roscommon jerseys. So hopefully they'll get them in the next few weeks for us to train with, but yeah, it's all about connection with the province, the fans, the people we represent, and I suppose it's not a thing that can be overlooked lightly. It's something that you have to continually invest in, continually look to grow. On Monday we had the kids from Galway Bay Rugby Club. They came in and presented us with our kit, which, you know, you can see that there's a massive bonus on it. Usually these things might in other places be done kind of as token gestures, whereas, you know, here we're really trying to connect with our fans and connect with our province.
Should have played bingo. How long does it take Roscommon man to bring up Roscommon GAA? It didn't take too long. We got maybe in the first time
it was done.
But, like, it's fair, like, Jack, to be honest, we had Davey Burke in studio twice just after he got the Roscommon senior job, and a couple of weeks ago, or last week or two, after the season, to reflect on it all. And, like, he was telling a story back in November about getting the job and not realising how much Roscommon people loved Gaelic football. I think he was sitting at a petrol station somewhere in Roscommon, and a lad just literally taps in the window and is just mad to talk to him about Roscommon football days after he gets the job. I presume you get to follow it fairly closely still. You would have been a multi-sport phenom back in the day yourself.
Yeah, I remember my club team, St. Bridget's, were playing in an All-Ireland final a good couple of years ago, and we were up in Croke Park, and they'd won, and I was walking out delighted, and I remember someone came up to me and he goes, I bet you wish you play the Gaelic football now. But yeah, it is massively tribal. Like, we have here in Connacht, myself, Niall Murray and Darren Murray, we're all from the same Gaelic football club. You've Dennis Buckley, obviously, from Roscommon, kind of via Blackrock, so I don't know who he kind of is shouting for, but yeah, there's immense pride in where we're from and who we represent. A lot of even Jared Butler, he's convinced us he's a Mayo man as well, so he goes around with Mayo jerseys. So I think there's a bit of crack being knocked out of as well, which is a good thing.
And was it hard at all to maybe pick between the sports?
It was. I picked rugby, and then I actually didn't end up subsequently getting into the Connacht Academy. So it was a kind of couple of months there where I was enjoying college life in Galway and playing rugby with Buccaneers back in Athlone and Nigel Carlin, who's the attack coach with Glasgow now at the moment. I remember he got in contact with me. I think it was the first or second week in January. Rag week was about to was on the horizon in Galway, and he was like, you know, if you come back in, my attendance now, which was I suppose voluntary at the time, kind of was really high at the start and then kind of dwindled towards the back end of it. But he was like, look, it's a contract there for you if you want it, but we need to get your attendance back up. You know, it's like, fine, just give me two more weeks of college. I need to get this rag week through. So,
first things first, rag week.
Yes, priorities. No, it was. I think it came at a point. You see kids nowadays, and there's a massive pressure on them to choose and specialise at an early age. And I think there was, at the time, it's probably something that's not really spoken about, but the work between Roscommon and Connacht at the time, Gary Wynn, who's a coach, and Nigel, and how they managed myself, Daniel Qualter and Shane Layden at the time in terms of not overtraining. And there was no pressure from either side. It was like, look, you can play your Gaelic football and your rugby, in the fact that knowing that in 2-3 months time, you kind of have to make a decision yourself. So yeah, it'd be nice if that was kind of the model, because I think there's an awful lot of pressure put on probably multi-talented athletes or young athletes, boys and girls, at this juncture in their life when they're 15, 16, 17 to kind of specialise in something.
And sport and rugby in particular is obviously a family affair as well, Jack. I know your younger brother Luke is an out half with the USA team as well, which is quite incredible. I don't know if you probably haven't had the chance to play against each other so far, have you? But
no, we haven't. We did train against each other quite a bit when he was in Connacht. And I remember he made a mockery of me one day, and everyone on the sideline shouting and screaming, throwing their hats on the ground. haven't been fortunate enough to play against him or with him. You never know what the future holds. There's another couple of years left in me. He's playing in Chicago now, and he's going into America camp on, I think it's the 18th of July. He starts up, so wishing him all the best.
And you could always retire a couple of years early and give Roscommon a couple of years, maybe.
There you
possibly.
Go.
But race for Sam.
I tell you, I went back a couple of years ago, and I did a bit of pre-season, or just a bit of like junior, and I'm like, I wouldn't. It's a completely different fitness. Like after about 30 minutes, my lungs were burning, legs were gone. So I have a lot of respect for the running and off the ball work that GA footballers do.
If someone like Davy Burke on the sidelines, I expect you'd keep running no matter what. Exactly. I was doing some laugh and reading a quote from you. There was an interview you'd done with one of the newspapers in the last year or two. You were talking about your competitiveness, and you'd said, and the thought has crapped into anyone's head if they're ever in a spa, if I get into a sauna and there's someone already in there, I will want to stay in longer. So that kind of summed up your mentality to me.
I remember I got a bit of slagging for this. So right. It would pop in, you know, I don't know, other people said it happens to them as well. And I came out of it with Tom Farrell one day. He's like, where were you? And I was like, oh, I didn't want to leave before the fella who'd got in. So I don't do it every time, but it happens at random times. I'm like, right, now I'll wait till that person finishes, then I'll get out. But that person then must have been doing what I was doing.
So no one was budging. What happened?
Yeah.
Tibby is like two well done steaks coming out of the steam room.
Yeah, literally.
I kind of understand where you're coming from, because if you get into a sauna or a steam room and someone comes in just after you, you're like, well, I can't leave before
them.
Yeah,
no, it's so true. Like, I never thought of it until you've actually mentioned it. I'm like, oh my god, yeah.
But it probably speaks to your competitive nature anyway, Jack.
Yeah, I suppose you kind of. Like I would have said probably when I was very young, when I was younger playing, I would have been probably overly competitive on the other side, and I probably would have lost probably friendships and stuff over it, because I was that kid who used to cry after they lost games or cry at referees. But I thankfully managed to kind of lose that side of it. But Yeah, I think people are motivated by different things. Look, some people are motivated by, you know, providing for their family, getting international honours, earning more money. It's a variety of different things that people are motivated, and I think there's no one thing that's right for them, or one thing that's right. I think if it's the right thing for you, and it manages to get you to where you want to get without obviously hurting people along the way, I think that's the way to go about it. And my motivation, I suppose, have changed, and kind of went swings and roundabouts at times, but yeah, I'm 30 now, so another couple of years and motivated as I've ever been.
Brilliant to hear. And obviously it's such an exciting time for Ireland at the minute, the World Cup on the horizon. Do you keep the hope that you'll be back in there?
Yeah, look, I'm acutely aware that there'd have to be a massive, strange series of unfortunate events for Anthony to be on the immediate horizon. But, you know, obviously you see what happened to Stephen Donald a couple of years ago, so you never know. So you just have to stay ready. I think it's about obviously building for the next 4 years and kind of seeing what that looks like. You know, obviously you see there's other players. Quade Cooper starting for Australia this weekend. He's 34, I think. So if you manage to look after your body and continue to play well, I think that side of it kind of ends up looking after itself.
If you have to look at the World Cup from a punditry perspective, Jack, how do you think this Irish team are set up? And I guess that quarterfinal invisible wall is always there, isn't it? But it feels like the year where we could potentially do it. But I don't want to curse the whole thing either.
Yeah, look, I think that's the point that you're talking about there. Like, I'm trying to even think back on in 2019, we probably wouldn't have spoken about that quarterfinal or anything like that. It was very much kind of each game as they come. But I suppose the difference in what I, from my time being there, is just the attitude towards, I suppose, obstacles. There's not this view of kind of trying to go around it. It's about attacking head on. I think that's what you've seen with that Irish team the last couple of years. You know, obviously they had a tough start, but they've learned from kind of where they've came from, where they are to now. And I suppose the mental resilience and fortitude that they have, obviously they've Gary Keegan in there, and then they've obviously Faz are directing it. So yeah, I'm not gonna say that they're not, but I think this is the best opportunity that we've had in a long, long time. And I definitely think in terms of the mental space that they're at, it is the best that probably an Irish team has been going in.
It's interesting. Like, I'm just thinking about your brother going off to America, and even you see a lot of Irish players going off to France and whatnot. Was playing abroad ever an option for you, or ever something that crossed your mind?
Yeah, there was a few kind of bits here and there. I suppose just around COVID, there was an opportunity to move to France. And it was basically kind of, well, not signed, sealed, but it was kind of agreed upon. But I suppose went back home to Athlone, had a good think about it, and it was like, well, I want to play for Ireland again. So I did only manage to, I didn't play for that long, only got a couple of minutes, but it definitely was the right decision for me when I look back now. You never know, towards the tail end of your career, you kind of see fellas doing that, whether it be America, France or Japan. So kind of who knows what the future holds. But yeah, it'd be definitely something that towards the latter part of my career, maybe that I kind of look towards.
Can you tell us what club it was? Ronan O'Gara straight away popped into my mind. La Rochelle.
No, it wasn't. It was Fremont.
Right, okay, yeah. I guess the temptation's always there when you like think of the quality of life, but then I guess you have to balance that against, you know, having the life in Ireland as well, and I guess the international prospects. So it's a tough decision, I guess, you have to make.
Yeah, look, it was, but you know, I was probably creating these scenarios in my head, trying to make it more attractive. Whereas, like, I wouldn't have went on to captain my province, so wouldn't have went on to play the games that I did. And I think, you know, you can obviously have them experiences, but I'm fortunate enough to be playing in the province I'm from, representing the people who from the province I'm from also. So I think it was one of them things. Obviously it was there, the attractiveness of it was there, but like when you got down to the nuts and bolts of it, Connacht was always going to be the winner really in it.
just before I let you go, Jack, that you mentioned the captaincy there, like at 30 years of age. Is this something that you've embraced, you always had ambitions of? I know you became the Connacht record point scorer, I think, overtaking Eric Elwood this season as well. So there's been a couple of key career moments and highlights for you this season. But the captaincy, what does that mean to you? Like, what style of captain, I guess, are you?
I've learned definitely a lot in the year and a half. Kind of was on field captain for a bit, and then last year obviously club captain. I think initially probably taking a lot to heart or a lot on board, but I'm blessed that I have, you know, Jared Butler there beside me, who's been phenomenal. You know, the amount of work and stuff he does in the background, and he still has the ability to perform on the pitch. I think that's probably one of the main things that I realise, that it's not about what you kind of do in and around the club. Your main job as captain still has to be your performance. I think that's probably the main currency you have, that if you're performing well, that's the way you lead, and that's how you lead by example. So I think that was probably the main thing that I realised, that you can't really be worrying about the nuts and bolts. You have to perform, and then all the other bits kind of fall in thereafter.
Great stuff, Jack. Listen, keep doing what you're doing, man, and great to catch up. We'll no doubt catch up again very soon, and best of luck with the year ahead.
Cheers, thank you. And just if anyone is thinking about doing the up the hill for Jack and Jill, you can get in contact with myself, or you can get on to Jack and Jill through their Instagram or Twitter page. Hopefully we can get a massive turnout and get a load of money, so we can kind of give the gift of time to families who are in desperate need of it.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. Jackandjill.ie, as Jack says, to register your Up the Hill for Jack and Jill fundraising event. As Jack says, every €18 registration fee helping to fund 1 hour of in-home nursing care and end-of-life support for over 400 children with highly complex life-limiting medical conditions countrywide. So a really, really great cause from Jack Cardy there. Great to hear from him as per usual. 9:19 now a.m. on this Friday morning's OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show on From Off the Ball with myself and Ashley, with you until 10 o'clock. Here are some highlights coming up on the OTB Podcast Network for you today. We've got Brian Driscoll in conversation with Louise Quinn. Some more Ireland reaction from the defeat to France last night with Vera Powell and Kira Carusa. The latest Koi Gig pod as well, which was recorded this morning in the wake of that game, and LOI match day as well. After the break, Colm Buick will bring his Friday happiness and joy and just Cork general spirit into studio to talk Wimbledon and other bits. We usually go off on tangents as well.
We're going to Australia. Surely. Surely.
No, there's no surely.
Screw you, accountants. You can't stop us now.
Off the Ball. Cheering on the girls in green.
9:22 a.m. on this Friday morning's OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. I give Colm Buick a fright. He's joined us back at the studio with his Friday happiness. Good morning, Colm. How are you?
Hey, it's a great show so far. Really enjoyed it.
Really good, isn't it?
Yeah. From start to finish, it was good. You had a bit of everything for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you have this.
Whoa.
Yep.
Highlight.
Made the best of last.
Yeah. It's a good time to do this, I think, you know. Yeah. But look, while the football was happening last night, it was very difficult to watch both. Like, I wouldn't be the biggest fan of dual screening. Literally, Andy Murray versus Stefanos Tsitsipas started at the exact same time.
Yeah.
The Irish and French players were walking out in Tala. So I went with the football, but as any opportunity I could, I flipped over to Murray Tsitsipas. What a match, like. Andy Murray's 36 years of age.
Yeah.
His hip is not real. He's playing a man 12 years his junior.
What age is Djokovic?
He's two sets to one up. Huh?
Djokovic?
Djokovic, 36.
He's 36 as well.
Yeah. There's very little between.
It's funny the narrative, though, isn't it? Djokovic is 36 and nobody cares.
Very little
Murray's
between
26.
Djokovic.
Feels like Andy Murray should be older. He's just that name around.
Jesus, yeah.
Tennis, Wimbledon especially. It's just, he's always coming back.
Been around for yonks.
Jeez, do you know what? You won't believe this. There's a week between them.
A week?
Wow.
Yeah, I knew there was something. It was either him and dad.
Who's older?
Yeah. Who do you think?
Well, I always thought Murray was older, but now that there's a week between them, it means nothing. Murray's older. Is he, right?
7 days more experience.
Jesus.
But Djokovic has 20 more Grand Slams.
Just the 20?
Yeah, just the 20.
Murray's still had a great career. Stan Wawrinka's career.
What a man.
Jesus.
I watched him up close, went to the Australian Open in 2014, the year he won it, which was the first Grand Slam. And the Australian Open, if anyone has an opportunity to go, if you're over there, please do. Please, and let me know, because the best thing about it is obviously watching the matches, but I think what was even better is watching him train up close and personal.
Right.
You get amazing access in Australia. Now, that was 9 years ago. I might have changed now. But you'd literally be the distance between me and you watching these formidable players just train. And when you're taught how to play tennis, you know, there's like, you know, you do the big wind up with the forehand and same with the backhand. Mm-hmm. But these guys just flick their wrists, like, and before you know it, like, it's a winner down the line. And they play with these hitting partners whose job is to be the professional's hitting partners. And I'd love to interview a hitting partner because they're way too good for amateurs.
Yeah.
But they're not good enough to make a professional.
Yeah.
So they just, they train with these people to improve them. And anytime they wanted to, and I, particularly Vavrinka stood out, not just because he won it that year, but he would just change the pace whenever he wanted to. Mm. And the hitting partner was technically excellent, mm-hmm. but the difference in levels was extraordinary.
What's the difference? Can they just not serve as fast?
No, they can do technically everything the same that the professionals can do. The difference is the professionals control the tempo.
Right.
So even if the hitting, now the hitting partner's job is to help their partner, so it's actually a bit of a dance. It's not a match, it's a dance. Yeah. But for argument's sake, if the training partner was like, I'm going to show Stan Wawrinka how good I am, Wawrinka would just start controlling straight away, give two or three shots back to him, and then he would start controlling where the player goes. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, was the most extraordinary element.
Have you been to Wimbledon?
I've been on a tour.
So not to actual Wimbledon? Call him.
Jess Kelly went.
Yeah.
She did this week.
It's presents, on my bucket list. I seen she brought you presents, yeah. It's fully on my bucket list. It's one of those sporting events that...
Oh, yeah. Take it off.
Yeah, I have to.
Is it still called Hellman Hill or is it Murray Mound? It's Murray Mound.
But has it caught on?
Yeah. Well, it's not the same, but no. I like, you know, they're just so... They're really in a state of despair that he's not English.
The English people are?
Yeah.
Well, he's English when he wins, or he's British when he wins.
No, but he's like, he's really Scottish. Like, he really, you know, he's all about being from Scotland. And, like, he's won it twice. He's won Wimbledon twice.
Yeah.
You know, everyone remembers, it's 10 years ago now when he won it for the first time against Djokovic. It's a brilliant final. Sorry, and he won it very easily 3 years later.
The reason I mentioned Vavrinka's course, because he plays Djokovic. Sorry, yeah. 2014 he wins that Australian Open.
Yeah.
2015 he wins the French Open.
Yeah.
2016 he wins the US Open.
Brilliant.
3 years in a row. And he also, 2014 and 15, gets to the quarters of Wimbledon. It's mad that that's the furthest he got in Wimbledon.
Yeah, he never took to grass. Same with Marat Safin. Do you remember the great Russian player about 20 years ago? Who also won a couple of Grand Slams. But Wawrinka has some great quotes. The lads actually played on the news round last night. He was like, I have zero chance of winning Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And he was like,
what a way to be.
He said, like, oh, it's just a bucket list tick off to play Djokovic at Wimbledon because he never has.
It's mad, isn't it?
But he has a really good record against Djokovic. And actually, just before I came in here, I was like searching to see if there's any breaking news this morning from Wimbledon. But they shared a clip of Djokovic against Wawrinka at that Australian Open that I was talking about, and just the rallies. Like, Wawrinka's 38 now, like, he's winding down.
Yeah,
regularly he gets knocked out in the first week of slams now, but like him in his peak a decade ago, what a player. He is one of those players who perfected the one-handed backhand,
yes,
which is like one of the hardest skills in tennis. Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried a one-handed backhand? Have you ever played tennis?
I have, yeah. I used to play tennis when I was younger.
I think you'd be good, yeah.
I was reasonable at tennis from a
Did
fitness
you tell
perspective.
Me your serve wasn't good? I thought you'd be a good server.
No, my serve wouldn't have been great. I could run around the court and get the ball back, and I was decent at the two-handed backhand.
You're tall, you see. So if a commentator,
I used to like a backhand slice.
Yeah, that's
a love backhand slice.
Safe.
Very safe.
Yeah.
Tough to miss a backhand slice.
Did you play tennis?
It was more like a holiday thing. Like, I remember me and my sister, my dad, like, we had such competitive tennis games. Like, going on holidays, that's what we did, and that's what we looked forward to. But there was just no tennis clubs really around us that we could get involved. It was more GA, soccer. That was their thing. But if there was, I'd say we probably would have played. Like, you know, obviously when Wimbledon was on, we all went out with our rackets on the road, you know, but we didn't have any courts.
I used to go out to my garden. We used to have a fence, a small fence that used to keep out our dog when he was a pup. And we turned the fence into a tennis thing. We used the chalk then to line out the court in the back tarmac. I used to pretend I was Mark Philippoussis.
Oh yeah, legend.
He was my favourite player.
Yeah, because of the name.
He got to the final in 03, which was
when I was
10.
Yeah.
I can't remember who lost it, but
Federer. That was Federer's first Grand Slam.
Was it? Yeah.
Great knowledge, Colm.
See, there you go. That year, I think, was my like peak. I was obsessed with Philippoussis. I don't know, was it his name? Was it how big he was?
Maybe both.
Combination of both, maybe.
Cool Aussie as well.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Laid back.
Yeah.
Just something struck me as a 10-year-old that Mark Philippoussis was the coolest man of all time.
Do you feel there's still as much hype around Wimbledon without the big, big names, obviously, we've seen?
They're missing Serena.
And Venus obviously went out first round.
Yeah, but I think Venus playing at all is extraordinary. But the Coco Gauff, like, playing Sofia Kenin, like, I think I said it during the week, like, that match has no right to be a first round match. Like, it's too good. It should be in the second week. But also, we've had a couple of those, like Tsitsipas against Dominic Thiem the other night. Even Murray Tsitsipas last night. Well, like the sat level is extraordinary.
Yeah, the quality was great, but the curfew thing.
Yeah.
I had forgotten that this existed. So last night, it's like, it comes on at 11 o'clock. It's like, oh, this game is finishing. 2-1 up for Murray. Resuming today. It's a farce.
They need their REM.
But when they need their 8 hours.
It's always been.
I didn't know this was always there. Was it?
Whereas the French Open, they don't care for the human aspect of people at all. Like,
yeah, because it was like up until 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. in the French Open.
Yeah,
like,
they'd be outrageous.
That's a bit outrageous.
Outrageous, yeah. Like, that's like going out on a night out. Like,
maybe I'm being selfish.
You come in 2 or 3 in the morning. No, like, let them have their rest and they'll come back today. But it's a pity the Murray Tsitsipas match started so late. Like, it's like after 7:30, and then they closed the roof from the start. But they were sitting an hour and a half to 2 hours of light.
Yeah,
so we better play it outside. We'll play it outside today now. So you play a bit of tennis.
I played a bit of tennis.
I got involved through my mother.
How?
So my mother.
She was a very good sports person.
Incredible. Have you not heard this?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact story.
Yeah.
Big football.
Listen, like. I told you this.
One in all Ireland.
Yeah. Yes. With?
I'm going to guess the county now, Clare.
Yeah.
There you go. See, I remember.
Against?
Against Dublin.
At?
Croke Park.
Year?
No chance. You haven't said the sport
I'm
yet.
Gonna disrespect your mother if I guess the year. I'm like,
oh, not necessarily.
Give me the decade.
The '70s.
I was gonna say the '70s. I'm just to be lovely to your mother. I'm gonna say
79,
74. See, I thought she was much younger than
Moggy. And Ger Gilroy's mother won with Antrim about 5 years prior.
Oh yeah.
So we had an idea to put them both on, but like my mother would be mortified. Like she wouldn't
do it.
So anyway, see, that was her last ever Camogie match.
Right.
And then she took up tennis.
Jeez.
So it's an easy enough transition.
Is it though?
Hand-eye coordination. She found tennis much easier than Camogie.
Jeez.
So anyway, all the kids, like all of us played because of my mother. And then, you know, you'd be embarrassed, like, because you'd be a teenager and, you know, you'd be trying to be cool or whatever, and you'd be playing against your mother in tennis and she'd just hammer you, like.
Yeah, it's a bit.
Four hands down the line. Like,
love it.
Have a hope.
Ego gone.
All ego, well and truly gone. And now she plays golf.
I was going to say, is that a
transition? Got rid of the tennis.
Yeah.
It's going through all the hand-eye coordination.
You probably enjoy paddle.
Yeah. Oh, I was on to Jenny Claffey, so she's up for doing that.
Playing you?
Yeah, and Adrian Barry.
Doubles or what's the story?
Oh, it has to be doubles and paddle.
Oh, it does.
Yeah. So she said, do you want to get the fourth partner or she can get one? But like all of her friends would be really good, like, so.
I'd play, but.
You want to play, do you? Do you want
to
play paddle?
I'd love to, yeah.
See, I should be good at it.
Whenever you're recovered.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I need the recovery time. Maybe just 4 weeks or so, hopefully. So.
Emma Carroll's suggesting just Jenny against me and Adrian.
Oh.
But you do need. Yeah, it needs to be four
need
people.
Anyone.
No, that's farcical. I'll play with Jenny. How about I play with Jenny?
No, I'd play with Jenny.
You and Adrian.
You play with it. Let the host of Friday's show, the usual host of Friday's show,
fair enough, yeah.
Play together and I'll play with Jenny.
Okay, that makes sense. We'll all take turns playing with Jenny so we can say we played with a potential Olympian.
When also a player who beat Anne Jabeur, 6-love, 6-love, when she was on the tour, Jenny Claffey, before injury curtailed her career. Anne Jabeur, 2-time Grand Slam finalist, Anne Jabeur.
Yeah.
Top 5 in the world, Anne Jabeur.
I think that's why Anne Jabeur hasn't got over the line and won a Grand Slam final.
Because I think she thinks back to
Jenny Claffey. Six love.
I know when Jenny finds us out, she'll be so happy that we're discussing this.
Yeah. Well, if I beat a 2-time Grand Slam finalist earlier in my career, 6-love, 6-love, I'd have it on the front of my LinkedIn. I'd have it as a Facebook status every day. I'd tweet it every week, maybe.
Yeah, I know.
And let people know, like.
I think you'd drop it in a bit subtly and then you'd hope that people.
Like I drop in Manon very subtly.
Yeah,
all the time.
Very subtly, yeah.
Extremely
subtly. Your man here starts the show like. So we went through a pre show like, this is what we're going to discuss today. And it's like, yeah, no problem, yeah.
No,
and the problem is when they go over the white line, so to speak, like, there's no, you have to leave it up to yourself.
I get it.
Hosting or co hosting?
Oh, that's a good question. I love them both.
Mm.
It's like asking a pilot, does he prefer being captain or co pilot?
I imagine.
A lot more work and the resenting.
Probably a bit more work, yeah.
I think it's easier to be a presenter.
The time goes faster.
Co-host, you have to come up with the opinions and feedback. Like, well, co-host, you just prompt.
Yeah,
you're very good at both. Like,
thank you, as
an observer.
Right, thanks very much. I like both, to be honest. Yeah. They're both very different experiences. Yeah.
And what is Wimbledon like without Sue Barker?
Not the same.
Yeah.
Not the same. And Sue was just so excellent. We're actually trying to get her on the show.
Yeah.
So if there's any chance, Sue, you're listening,
please
do come on. We'd love to get your You Had to Be There, or just come on at all and just talk about your career, both on the court. And as a presenter, she won the French Open.
Incredible.
Do you know that? Like she was a seriously good player. Like,
really,
she's the Gary Lineker of tennis. People just assume that she's just a really good broadcaster. if you're coming to it new, do you know? Yeah, but it turns out that, like, no, she really could play herself. Like,
Jesus.
So Claire Balding, I suppose, is now the more prominent figure than she
used to be. Give us the quote she's come out with this week.
Oh, yeah. The quote there was, Centre Court is the greatest sporting stage in the world.
I have something to go against that.
Is it some sort of Monaghan pitch?
No, it's the Crucible Theatre in Sheffield. Yeah.
Crucible?
Yeah, we spoke to Jason Quigley off air after the he was in the other day. Yeah. And he agrees. He's a good friend of John Higgins, the snooker player. And he was like, when you go to the Crucible, there's just something. And it's impossible to describe it. Even if you don't like snooker, you leave there loving snooker. Because it's so intense. You can see into the eyes of the players. You can smell the feckin' aftershave off the players. You're so close to the action. And when someone like Ronnie O'Sullivan is walking around a snooker table and it's just dead quiet and you're sitting there hoping your phone doesn't go off, hoping you don't move in your eye line, it's very tense. So that, for me, the Crucible is the greatest sporting stage in the world.
Obviously I love Croke Park, but maybe Celtic Park.
Which was Park Talton.
Never been, actually.
What are you laughing at?
My sister drove by Ibrox yesterday.
Right, I hope she kept driving.
She did. Irish Ridge.
Actually, Celtic Park is a good show. I'd say I've been to Celtic Park a few times for matches.
Yeah.
But never on a European night.
Yeah, unbelievable atmosphere.
Yeah, I'd say that's different.
Like, you hear some of the top players that have played there. You know, they've always come out to say, like, it is an incredible atmosphere, and it really is. I do think it doesn't matter if you're not into it at all, not into Scottish football, to go and just experience it as a night out, as a sporting experience.
Yeah.
It's definitely up there.
100%. I think the games I saw in Celtic Park were, like, Inverness, Cali Thistle and Dundee United. It wasn't exactly the European night.
Yeah, Champions League night. That is what you need to get, for sure. What about you, Colin?
Madison Square Garden.
Ooh.
Okay.
That's such a cocky way of saying that.
Not a great...
I don't even look. Madison Square Garden.
No, I'm looking at the time, actually.
Right.
Someone has to keep control, do you know? Jesus. But I was only there
always
once.
A producer.
I
was what only was on?
Once. Nothing. I was just there. I just went in to have a look at it. But it's kind of a bit of an edge to that part of New York as well.
I've been there, yeah.
Yeah. I like it.
Which borough is it, Manhattan?
Yeah. Come here. Sorry. I should have come in earlier.
I'd love to chat more. You should have. But listen, Colm, it's been a pleasure, a distinct pleasure.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me on.
I know you look at the clock.
It's
massively.
A great show.
Yeah, it's a fantastic show. Ashley, brilliant stuff, as
thank
per
you,
usual.
Shane.
All the best with the recovery.
Thanks, Colm. I know.
You're back on next Friday, aren't you?
I'm back again Friday,
The day before Monaghan Dublin.
You. We're allowed to talk Monaghan
then. We talk Monaghan that day, for sure.
Yeah, and Meath.
And Meath, sorry, Meath down in the Tottenham Cup final as well.
Yep.
We'll mention that doubleheader.
It's a big one.
Big one in Aisling's household as well.
It is, yep.
Column.
From Meath, living down.
That's going to be awkward. Listen, it'll be great. Thanks everyone for tuning in today as well. On Monday's show, we'll have special guest host Sarah O'Donovan joining myself in studio. We'll have the performance rankings, all the reaction to the weekend's camogie and hurling as well. Limerick's Seamus Hickey will join us. Alan Quinlan on the Under-20s World Cup, World Championship, I should say, semi-final against South Africa. Vinnie Perth talking League of Ireland, plenty more besides. Right now, Owen Coggins, you had to be there. Have a formidable Friday.
OTB AM.
The Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball.